Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes to the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, Pennsylvania State Representative Scott Conklin will be in the studio talking about the budget, our governor, the state of the state, where we're heading, all that. Your calls also for the representative, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. In the second hour, Neil Bisno, president of Healthcare PA, going to be here talking about the strike action we were at this afternoon. We'll talk a little bit about that here in a second. But he'll be here to kind of fill us in on the details, where things are going to go from this point forward and how you can help. Also in the third hour, Bradley Harmon. He's a public service worker in Missouri, and he's also the president of Local Union 6355 of the Communication Workers of America, talking about Missouri has, for now, beaten back the right to work for less, the right to be abused, the right to get shafted at the job, whatever you want to call these euphemistically named attacks on workers. In Missouri, in the Senate, they have beaten this back. So we're going to find out a little bit about that, and maybe we'll see if it what's going to happen in the coming days, because there are these kind of bills circulating our General Assembly. They're going around our house, if you will. Some of the far out crazies who would like to see us become Mississippi or Alabama or Arkansas. A very uneven state, even more than I would say we are today. They're circulating these kind of things. Before we move on, among the many positives of today, and I am, I can say I'm glad that the nitwits from that Westboro cult group, run by the Phelps clan, that they didn't show up to the funeral of those seven children who were killed in the fire last week. They were buried today. The community pulled together to support the grieving family, and no insane cult group. So that was very good. Very happy about it. And to be honest, it was probably a very smart move on their part, because the reality is, look, you know, at the end of all this, what ends up happening is we are in the middle of who knows where up there. Anyway, today we were up in the Pocono Medical Center. The workers there went on strike after a long action. Look, these people have been negotiating for a contract for quite some time. And what's ended up is they've been pushed into a corner where the employer said, you're getting nothing. You're going to have to go out onto the picket line, which they have now done. It's going to be a three-day action. But today was a really one of those, again, you know, one of those moments that I talk about it being almost a religious experience in that I have faith in my fellow citizen. A couple hundred people showed up to support these workers in their struggle to just maintain what they've already got. This is another example of the corporations saying, you know what, we're going to take from you. And, you know, I've talked about this quite often. And some of the people that I've talked to recently who don't know much about labor, don't know much about collective bargaining, they end up in a situation where they're used to having things taken from them. So it's no surprise when another right is taken away. It's no surprise when another benefit is reduced and another pay cut comes. It's no surprise. And I liken it almost Stockholm syndrome, where people are used to being abused. So it's just, you know, it's just part of the everyday culture, if you will. I call them the discarded class, that they don't mind being held at will, that tomorrow could be the end of their existence, by, you know, just one minor slip up or nothing at all, considering Pennsylvania is an at will employment state. So these folks up at Pocono Medical Center said, look, you know, we want to continue our contract. We want to continue it in the manner that it has been for the years past. So they have taken to the streets for 3 days. And, you know, you talk to the folks there, and these aren't big money people. These aren't high paying jobs. These are moderate paying jobs. But these people have a voice where they work. They have a say in how their day goes. They have a say in the care of their patients. And for these folks, this was very important. Very important. And thank goodness for them. And in the second hour, we're going to talk with Neil Bisno about that, and how we can get involved in this. You know, but the frame that's been thrown out, especially when you talk about actions like this, because now is not the best time, to be standing on a picket line. Now is not the best time to be doing this, because the economy's really, it's coming back, but it's not where we would like it to be. And what's ended up happening is you've put the employer in a better position. And all we keep hearing is how these greedy public sector people, how they have gotten so much more than the private sector. And what's interesting is you hear the public sector workers saying that the private sector workers have gotten such higher pay. And the private sector workers are saying, well, these public sector workers, they've got such great benefits. The reality is, and I think Larry Michaud and Heidi Schinzenholz said it best when they said, neither private sector workers nor state and local government employees have seen their pay rise much over the last two decades, and what meager pay growth they have experienced has been far outpaced by the growth in productivity, the increased goods and services that they themselves have generated. And Ezra Klein over at the Post today did a nice job of going through some of the numbers and saying, look, you know, had workers been able to keep up with their productivity as they had for a couple of generations, as the more work they did, the more wages they earned. But what they're saying, from 1978 until 2009, the hourly wage for median workers grew by only 10%. Now, during that same time, productivity gains grew by 80%. So somewhere in that middle ground, somebody's taking these productivity gains, and it's not the workers. And you look at the grand alligator jaws that have opened up, with those at the very top doing very well and those at the very bottom not doing so well, and you see where those productivity gains have gone. They've gone to a very, very small number of people. And interestingly enough, as I was standing on the picket line today, you could see, again, going back to Jay Gould, the railroad magnate, who said, I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. You could see that kind of division. You had an army of security guards, not an army, you had probably 8 or 10 of them probably. But you could see them, they were kind of jacked up, especially one guy who I had a nice conversation with who, it turns out, only not making much more than minimum wage himself. I thought very, very ironic. But again, you know, you see this division, and what the investor class has done a masterful job of is slicing and dicing, dividing your union or non-union, your white, your black, your skilled, your unskilled, whatever divisions that they can possibly throw in there. That's the movement that they go towards. So anyway, it was a great action today. I was happy to be there, and we're going to talk to some folks tonight and in the coming days as this thing moves forward. I want to take a quick break early. I've got Scott Conklin, state representative, here in the studio. We want to talk to him a little bit. We're going to come back, talk to him. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. I'm with you now.
till the end.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Thousands of people are gathering in Lansing, Michigan today for a big rally protesting an outrageous Republican political attack on working families, seniors, and the poor. Governor Rick Snyder and Republicans controlling Michigan's legislature are pushing through 40 different anti-worker, anti-union bills. The most sweeping may be the Emergency Manager's Bill, a financial martial law that allows governor-appointed corporate managers to literally take over local governments, dissolve them, destroy all collective bargaining contracts, and even oust elected local officials. OPEIU Vice President Joe Marudiak is in Lansing today for that rally.
It is martial law, and the local officials should be just as upset about it as the unions are, because it takes power away from the people themselves, the people who have elected someone to represent them, and gives it to one individual.
Marudiak says the labor movement is more energized than he's seen it in 30 years.
Well, I've been doing this 30 years, and I've never seen this level of energy. I wish we would have had it when the PATCO strike happened, but it's happening now, and people are drawing a line in the sand. And I think it's wonderful, and it shows a lot about the next generation coming up, saying, you know, we're not going to let these rights be taken away.
In addition to attacking working families and unions, Governor Snyder is cutting taxes for corporations in Michigan while increasing personal taxes by 31%, including taxes on seniors and the poor. As many as 50 managers are being trained to take over local governments when Michigan's governor signs that emergency manager's bill. Jesse Russell has more.
The legislation allows the state to appoint the managers in municipalities and school districts that are facing insolvency. The managers would have broad authority, including the power to strip labor contracts and usurp the decisions of elected officials. The state has allegedly been in the process of training more than 50 managers as the debate raged on over the proposals. Michigan State Senator Gretchen Whitmer spoke out against the legislation last week, as it also provides $1.8 billion in tax cuts for businesses.
The current job creation policy is to create so many taxpayer-funded millionaires in the state of Michigan. How on earth is that shared sacrifice? Today, my colleagues on the other side of the aisle say it's okay for an individual to come in to a community or into our schools and make $1 million on the backs of the taxpayers.
This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
That's kind of going to be the state of Pennsylvania as we move forward. The more we're handing out to corporations, I guess we're just going to start auctioning stuff off to the lowest bidder. Because in this economy, you're not going to get those top bids, especially looking at our state stores. Just mind numbing that we're even talking about that in this economy. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I'm sitting here with Pennsylvania State Representative Scott Conklin. Scott, I appreciate you coming over, taking time for us.
Hey, anytime Rick Smith calls and says you're supposed to be here, you don't hesitate. You get over here as fast as you can.
Wow, bloated ego. What did you think of the budget address that our governor gave the other day? We put out a video right away, said, look, again, we knew what was coming. We knew handouts to corporations and people at the bottom, folks at the margin, were going to suffer. Did you think it was going to be as bad as it was?
Well, first off, my hand's off to the governor. He gave a great 45-minute filled with 10-second sound bites. Sounds good. But at the end of the day, sound bites win election, but policy runs government. And I'll tell you what, at the end of the day, let's start with the state stores. They're talking about privatizing them. They're talking about selling them. It's going to bring billions of dollars in. That comes to about $2.3 million a liquor license. Somebody finally did the math, if you notice, over the last few weeks. So now they aren't talking about making money from it. It's about a morality issue. Yeah. It's about morality.
It's about core functions of government.
And as long as we're talking morality, can you tell me the last time that a state store was in the paper for selling to somebody underage or for selling to intoxicated people? or the last time a state store was robbed. Because right. they're run right. They're run by people whose job is not to sell alcohol. Their job is to make sure it's done right. I guarantee you spend $2 million for a liquor license, you're going to sell a lot of liquor.
You're going to want your return on investment.
You're not going to care. If you're in the university system, I represent Penn State University. $162 million cut. What folks don't realize, they say, yeah, the rich kids can afford the education. That money goes to outreach. If you're a small businessman, it's gone. If you're a farmer, it's gone. If you want to know what's happened to the honeybee, that research money is gone. If you want to talk about economic, by the way, for every dollar we put in the university system, that's $26 back comes to the community. It's going to cost about 1,500 jobs in central Pennsylvania alone. Those jobs are going to be gone if we go down this road. No whams? He just gave out $148 million in whams to folks. I didn't get any. I'm sure there are a lot of happy people. It's absolutely great what's doing politically. It's wonderful. What he's getting ready to do, he bloated the DPW budget, which is the welfare budget, by over $600 million, about $650 million. What he's going to do, it's crystal clear. He's going to pit the middle class against the poor.
Right.
Because in 2008, we saw what happened when the middle class and the poor banded together. We elected Obama. We elected Democrats. Last year, they were able to divide us. They were able to get on the tax issue. Great plan. You cut $1 billion in education. You raise property taxes. So people are upset at the school teachers, the unions. It's natural impulse. It's a national trend. And by the way, Pennsylvania, I love Wisconsin. They left. We're not leaving. We're dug in. We're going to fight.
Well, I mean, in Wisconsin, to be honest, they had no other choice. They would have just been steamrolled.
And it absolutely. The last poll results from the Wisconsin governor, he can't make reelection. Even everyone's touting Christie as the hero. The last poll I saw last week, Christie can't make reelection. So this isn't what Pennsylvania voted for. Pennsylvania did not vote for $1 billion to be cut. Pennsylvania didn't vote for an assault on their union employees. Pennsylvania didn't vote for their tuitions to go up. This isn't what they voted for. This wasn't talked about. Nothing that's being done, and you probably didn't guess I was close to last year's governor's election.
A little bit.
But nothing that's being done in this budget is talked about. During the campaign. The only reform issue that's been done has been my constitutional convention forum, which, by the way, the governor says he's not doing. There's been no other reforms done. There's been nothing done. This isn't what the people of Pennsylvania voted for.
Yeah, I wish you'd had a better gubernatorial candidate. I was not a big fan. I wish you'd had a better candidate. I think you'd have done much better. You said something a little earlier that is a theme I've been playing on for some time, that the Republicans they're very good at campaigning. They're very good at sloganeering. They're very good at breaking things down into very, very simplistic terms. But they're not very good at governing and understanding broad-based how things are going to affect down the road, or if they care. But for me, it comes down to that frame that they're very good at getting elected, but once in power, once in the halls, the decision-making position, it doesn't work out for you. For me, anyway, you're a working-class guy like me, so it doesn't work out for you all that well either.
It's called follow the money. I mean, we have the world's largest supply of natural gas right here in Pennsylvania. We have the purest natural gas you can get. In fact, our natural gas is so pure, you can pump it directly out of the ground, put a condensing unit in your house, and use it directly in your furnace. That's how pure it is.
Wow.
It burns hotter. We're not taxing it. You know, I love my colleagues talk about, let's run Pennsylvania like Texas.
Yeah.
I say, let's run it like Texas. Let's tax natural gas. Let's give local municipalities the ability to raise or lower whatever fees they need to do. Let's do it just like Texas. Or let's run it effectively and efficiently. You can't have it both ways. In Pennsylvania today, here's something for your listeners are going to love, and I'm sure you heard the statistic before. If you make $36,000 a year in Pennsylvania, your family pays more taxes than 84% of the corporations in Pennsylvania. How's that for, you know, if it want to make you feel good?
Well, it shows who's important in this state. You know, it really shows where the allegiance lies. It's not with you and me.
Well, the governor even just put on the Marcellus Shale, he even just put the guy who he put in head of the business is allowed to expedite the permits for drilling within the state of Pennsylvania. So he's put in that he's going to bypass the DEP and allow somebody who's in charge of business management to expedite the permits for drilling in Pennsylvania. It's over the next 4 years, this could be a change in Pennsylvania that we've never seen before. But the problem comes, and you were talking about what the folks on the other side are good at. What they're really good at is making, is talking the sound, but making it complex. For me to explain to the listener what's happening today, and if you want to pick the topic, I'll try to explain it. But within 30 seconds, your eyes are going to gloss over, and they're going to say, well, I'd rather just live within my means. It's a lot easier to remember that. And that's the problem, is that to describe that, now 75% of the business in Pennsylvania don't pay corporate tax. They use the Delaware loophole. The governor's made it clear he's not going to close that. He's made it clear that he won't do any fees. He's made it clear that even as far as folks paying sales tax, he's not going to do that because he considers that a tax increase. Somebody's paying taxes. He's raising property taxes over the next 4 years. If we continue with what we're doing, you're going to see the largest rise in your local property taxes you've ever seen in your life. And you're going to blame your school boards. You're blaming the wrong person. You should turn around and look at your legislative body and your governor and put the blame where it should be.
Yeah, you said a second ago, live within your means. And one of the other things that I've been fighting is this idea that we run government the way Rick Smith would run his kitchen table, the way he, you know, I have a job, I bring in a paycheck, I pay my bills. If I get a pay cut, I got to cut some things. This mentality that we run government as a kitchen table to me has just infuriated me, because it's way too simplistic, and it doesn't take into account that government, does have a responsibility in down times, to not only help the citizens of the state, but also the businesses.
You're absolutely right. I'm a small businessman. My wife and I employ a half dozen people. We have a small business. The only thing that hurts me, and I'm going back to property tax, the only thing that hurts me is property taxes. I fall under the 3.7% just as I do as a legislator, just as you do when you pay your taxes. That's what I fall under, which is pretty cheap, but my property taxes kill me. But if you're sitting around your kitchen table, if you're running government like a business, the first thing you do is get rid of the prisons. Let's get rid of them. In fact, our prisons, we put more into prisons than we do in education. They cost us money. We'd get rid of the disabled. You know, the disabled don't give us any money. They cost us money. We'd get rid of them. We'd get rid of the mentally handicapped. Cost us money. We'd get rid of the folks that help out our aging. We get rid of them all.
Well, if you listen, you listen to the guy from New Hampshire the other day, the 91-year-old state rep up there, he said, send those mentally ill off to Siberia and let the other defective ones just fall by the wayside.
You know what? And are you ready for this? I'm going to get in trouble. That is not what a Christian society does. And mind you, my chairman's Jewish, Muslim. That's not, as long as my colleagues like to invoke the Bible into their arguments, that's not what a Christian nation does. They take care of the indigent. They feed those who can't be fed. So we can't, and I'm going way off track here, but you can't have it both ways. You know, we can use business practices. And by the way, when I was the chairman of the board for the Center County Commissioners, best financial rating in history, left the county with surpluses with the Democratic board. Because Democrats are fiscally conservative, they are manageable, but we also understand the big picture. We understand that there are families that need taken care of, indigent that need taken care of, elderly that need their medication, and you can run it effectively. Our problem is that we aren't good at the 10-second soundbite. We aren't good at the Sarah Palins or the George Bushes or the folks who do it very, very well. We try to explain why Barack Obama, if you listen to him, one of the reasons you hear Barack Obama stammer is because he takes 8-10 points and he tries to bring it into one point. And that, in his mind's working. It's easier just to say, live within your means. It's 10-second soundbite.
It's very simplistic. And what it shows to me is it shows a lack of critical thinking skills on the electorate. And maybe there is a failure of education. I mean, I don't honestly and truthfully want education slashed by $1 billion because I do understand what that means down the road. It does mean higher property taxes or less services. It means that our society will change in very negative ways. You know, I go back to when I was in school, and then if it weren't for football, I wouldn't have probably finished high school. You know, I had some you know, things going on, and that's what kept me anchored for a couple of years. The reality is I talk to parents now who, you know, they're talking about putting $300-$400 fees on playing sports. These things keep kids in school, and it is part of that whole experience.
Well, one of the things you and you were talking about the cuts, when you, you know, there are things that help young children grow, and it's not just, it's sports, it's the arts, it's music, and those are the easiest things to cut. You were talking about cutting, one of the school districts that I sit on education, but one of the school districts I was looking at is a little town called Phillipsburg. It happens to be in my district, but this can be across the board. It has a 48% poverty level, and they're cutting $1 billion out of the school budget. You do not make up with a school system that has about 1,200 kids in it, with a 48%, and this, the whole complete school system has about 1,200 kids in it, 1,200 to 1,600. You do not cut $1 million from that budget with a 47.8% poverty within that district. There's no place to get it. You can't get it. You've got to cut. You've got to slash. You have no choice. But that's across the state. We're cutting full day as a legislator, I've worked hard since 06 for the pre-K counts, full day kindergartens to give those kids. In fact, Pennsylvania, only state in the nation last year that increased in test scores in every grade. Only state.
Because you invested in it.
We invested. We're taking that investment away. We're taking it away and we're giving it away. We're giving it away to people that aren't invested here, that don't pay taxes here, but they do pay millions of dollars. I mean, I didn't get plane tickets to the Super Bowl this year. I didn't get to go down paid for by an oil company or gas company. I didn't get that.
You wouldn't be talking about Mr. Scarnati.
Well, there are others as well. Sure, he was just the highest
ranking.
He's
the one who got caught.
Yeah. He was just the highest ranking. And believe it or not, both sides of the aisle it happened on. You know, my problem is the guys that support me are the guys, those overly paid union workers, the ones that work for SCIU making $22,000 a year. And, you know, I worked carpentry my whole life. My father was a carpenter. He never made more than $32,000 a year. We're still waiting for those huge paychecks that they keep talking about. You've got, if you're going to break the back, especially under the new federal law, the only place that's left for the Democrats are the working people or the unions. You've got to finish off what you've started. You've got to break the unions. You've got to do it nationally. If you want to finish it, if you want to keep control, if you want to go back to the archaic 20th century, 1920s, before all this started, you've got to finish what they've started. And they're close. People do not realize how close this is now.
Yeah, and they're very brazen about it. They're very open, honest. That phone call with the fake Koch brother, or Koch brother with Governor Walker, didn't say anything we didn't already know. But, you know, for me, it was the arrogance. It was the calm in his voice of this is a conversation we've had 100 times before. We're just following the plan. And when the imitation Koch brother said, maybe we send in some troublemakers, and you had a sitting governor say, we thought of that. I mean, to me, that should shake every working person in this country awake, that someone at the highest levels of government had thought about sending in a troublemaker to cause who knows what, a riot, a bombing, who knows what.
Rick, it's a national plan. The plan that you're seeing implemented in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and New Jersey and Illinois is not a plan that's done individually. This is a national plan that's put together very, very well.
Sure. The people at the Heritage Foundation have done a great job. And all this is stuff that they've been whispering to each other in the cloakrooms of their little think tanks and their secret societies for generations. It's just now they feel emboldened to come out because they've got all the money.
And you know, it's all Obama's fault, too, as well, although the recession hit before he took office. And the hardest thing there is for Democrats, for us to understand, is that when you look at a historical presence on what happens after recession, it's going to take 48 to 60 months before the unemployment really begins to turn around. We're only in the first year of it. So it's people are hurting. They're hurting for money. They don't have time to be paying attention. And the best thing that happens is that we go, myself and you, we go on and we try to explain it. And the average person listens to it. You know what? They're all crooks. They're all no good. And they turn off. It's, you know, the less people to vote, the easier it is to control.
Yep.
So what's happening today is that Democrats did not turn out the last election. They didn't turn. I mean, I ran up and down every rural area there was trying to get them to turn out. We just couldn't do it. So it's a national trend, especially our union brothers and sisters have to stand strong. You know what? As a friend once told me, a guy asked me about, who's a union brother of mine, said, you know, Obama's going to take our guns. And I looked at him and I said, you know what? Can you tell me a plan that Obama's done to take your guns? And he said, well, the NRA said, you know, and I'm going to the NRA banquet this weekend. Don't think badly of me, but I hunt and I fish. But I explained to him, I said, you know, I don't want to make you feel bad or make you feel that you're less important than you are. But Obama has the Marines, the Army, the Air Force, the National Guard. He doesn't need your guns.
Yep.
He doesn't need them all. There's no Democrat that's tried to take Rendell, who everybody criticized, never tried to take your guns away. So, folks, quit voting on your guns. Vote on your pocketbook.
Yeah, absolutely. Vote on your job. Can you stick around for another segment?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. If you've got a question for the representative, back after this.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
The greatest problem our nation faces can be summed up in one word, leadership. Okay, make that three words, lack of leadership. America's corporate, political, media, academic, and other leaders aren't. They're not leaders because they refuse to stand tall, be bold, offer vision, inspire, and, well, lead. We've got too many 5-watt bulbs sitting in 100-watt sockets. They're squishing the historic can-do spirit of the American people, reducing it to a dispiriting ethic of surrender that says we shouldn't even try. Start with our leaders' willful abdication of the American dream. They've given up on the notion of producing a shared prosperity that creates a broad middle class. For more than a decade now, Wall Street and Washington have let millions of jobs disappear and pushed wages down. They now yawn at the entrenched jobs crisis that is eating the middle class, and rather than responding to the plight of millions of hard-hit families, they're trying to bust unions and kill minimum wage laws. They call it the new normal, in which the workaday majority of folks should simply ratchet down their hopes and expectations. A national commitment to quality education, health care for all, and a decent retirement has been reduced to a yo-yo program. You're on your own. What about creating a vibrant new green economy based on renewable energy? Let China build it, they shrug. How about constructing a bold nationwide job-creating network of high-speed trains? Spain built a great one, and even France has one, but we're told it's too much for America. Our deteriorating and dangerous infrastructure? Better that we cut taxes for the super rich and pray for God to take care of infrastructure. This is Jim Hightower saying, these people are pathetic and shameful. You can't call yourself a leader if you're too weak and too afraid to lead.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Sitting here with Scott Conklin, Pennsylvania State Representative. You know, one of the things that the governor has taken a beating for in my circles is this idea of vouchers. At a time when you're talking about cutting $1 billion from education, we're going to set up an entirely new I guess you can use the word entitlement program that eventually is going to end up in the hands of the very well-to-do, I think. But again, could cost us another $1 billion that we don't have. Just seems kind of dumb to me.
Well, you know,
and you got Democrats who are on board with this.
If you own a charter school, if you own a private school, it's a great way for you because to start with, unlike the public school, you can pick and choose who you take. You get to take, if you're not handicap accessible, you don't have to take handicap. If you have no special needs instructors, you don't have to take special needs. So you get to pick and choose. And then you get the school system to have to bus you to wherever those kids have to go. It's a system. We went to 501 school districts for a reason. We went there because it's unsustainable. You know, what I love about this whole voucher school system, and folks, think about this. One sentence you hear legislators talking about we've got to downsize our school systems. We've got to consolidate. We've got to make them smaller. Then that same legislator a week later is telling you we're going to do the voucher system to give choice. Well, excuse my language, but where in the, I almost said the other word, where the heck do you think these students are coming from? You're going to create a whole nother school system. And to start with, the first year, three quarters of the state isn't eligible for them. So the original plan, by the way, the details are to follow is everything, whether it's the privatization of the liquor stores, whether it's the school voucher system. We're just telling you how wonderful it is, and we'll give you the details later. Reminds me of George Bush, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't want to get caught up in details, but I'm going to tell folks, if you want to see your property taxes go through the roof, because I got news for you. When you're running a brick-and-mortar school, it doesn't matter whether there's 20 kids in that classroom or 27 in that classroom. It costs you the same amount of money. Now what we're going to do is we're going to take money out of your school system, and we're going to move it over. You know what we need to do is to go in and help the school systems. If you're in inner city Philadelphia, inner city Pittsburgh, inner city Erie, those kids are afraid to go to school. It's time for the governor or who's in the school districts to say, you know what? Let's make these schools safe. Let's allow these kids to come in.
Even here in Harrisburg.
Harrisburg, you know, excellent example. Let's make the school safe for folks. Let's make these kids that they're not afraid to go to school. That's not hard. By taking money out of it isn't gonna work. It's not gonna help. I'm in rural Pennsylvania. Do you know how many private schools are in my district?
No, how many?
Zero. So I have folks in my district thinks voucher systems are great, and I look at them and say, where are you gonna send your child to? There isn't one. So if you're in rural Pennsylvania, folks, I got news for you. You're gonna lose even more money out of the system. And I've never believed in east, west, south, north, wherever it may be. But look at this plan. The original plan? None of it's coming. It's only a few set schools. By the way, it's a poverty level. It's 120%. It's about $26,000 a year. So if you have higher than a $26,000 a year income in your house, until they change the plan, you're not eligible for it.
Yeah, what this reminds me of, and it goes back to when I was a kid going to school in Cleveland, it reminds me of the insane scheme that they come up with back in the 70s. Where they bus kids from a poor area on the west side of Cleveland to a poor area on the east side of Cleveland. And the only people who made out in this whole shenanigan were the people who owned the buses. Because you were basically just shuttling kids back and forth. Actually, education went down, the costs went through the roof, and the school district's still suffering because of it. Unfortunately, they stopped it a number of years ago, but at the end of it, yeah, how many kids fell through the hole because you took all of that resource that could have been used to educate them and put it into gas and put it into buses and all of that ridiculous nonsense. And this is, to me, again, you could be making these schools so much better.
We have to take control of the system, and we have to take control of it through good, sound management practices. One of the problems we have as legislators is that I told you I've been self-employed my whole life. I'm a proud member of Local 950, the Carpenters Union, have been for almost, you know, for over 30 years. But when I was, whether I was the chief executive officer of the county or whether I was in business, I laid out a plan. I researched it. I did what I had to do. The legislature, we don't make plans. We just come up with what we think is a good idea and a nice donation in our pocketbook, and it sounds like a great plan, and we go through with it. Our school systems are the best in the world. What we need to do is to make them safe for children. When you talk to parents, in whether it's you're in inner city Harrisburg, Philadelphia, they want their children to be safe when they go to school. That's what they're asking for. They're being sold a dream. They're being sold a dream that their children are going to go to a nice school, which every parent wants. But at the end of the day, their child's not going to be eligible because there's only going to be 20 positions that are available. And those kids aren't going to get to go.
Isn't a big part of this the way we allocate resources to the different school districts, though? I mean, the fact is you've got inner city schools here in Harrisburg or in Philadelphia or Pittsburgh who they just don't have the money, and you go into some of these suburbs, and you're like, we had Dalen Leach on the program, and he was saying, you know, in his school, the one district paid, I think, like $22,000 per student in the public school, where you can go into parts of Philadelphia where you're talking about $6,000 or $7,000 per student.
Well, you look at Philadelphia is a great example. Philadelphia has the best schools in the state, the best. Everyone rips on Philly for being the worst. Philadelphia has the best schools in the state. They get awards for their academic achievements, but they also have the worst schools in the state. You're right. In my little districts in central Pennsylvania, I have one school district, State College, has a 15% poverty level, is in the top 10 across this country for academics, And then I have another school district that does very, very well, but has almost a 48% poverty level. So the disparity within a district itself is unbelievable. But we as a legislator, we went a long way. The last 6 years, I'm proud of what we've done. I'm proud of what we've done with the full-day kindergarten, the pre-K counts, early intervention, reading test scores going up. It's all being undone. It's all being undone, and we're diverting that money to the folks that actually need it, but we refuse to make corporations and big business pay their fair share, and that's what it is. It's about equity. And I'm a businessman. I believe in business 100%, but I believe in equity. And when somebody makes $4 billion in profit and pays less taxes than a family making $36,000 a year, we've got a problem in this state.
We absolutely do. And you know what's interesting is earlier, I think in the last segment you were talking about the amount of tax that you pay and as a small business that we pay. And we do pay our taxes, and the fact is that I've seen numbers up to 3/4 of the corporations in the state pay zero taxes. You kind of look at that and you go, you know, the small business folks, they're the ones who are carrying the freight, and if they're the engine of job creation, shouldn't we be helping them and encouraging them to grow?
And you're absolutely right. It is up to 3/4 of the corporations don't pay taxes in the state.
Interesting. Interesting stuff. You know, I look at this and I think that the reality is in this budget. We have a governor that has chosen a different route.
Well, back to the budget again, Rick. Look at that budget. He's putting a $600 million increase in DPW welfare. He's cutting $1 billion out of schools. What he's doing, he's pitting the middle class against the poor.
Nice. Good report just came in. Looks like you're going to be getting a new colleague in the Senate. Looks like Judy Schwenk. They're saying she's 3,000 votes up right now, 38% of the precincts left to report, but she's over 3,000 votes up. So you may be getting a new Democratic senator to replace the senator who passed away, Michael Opaque, I believe his name is.
And Judy Schwenk's going to be a good one. Judy and I actually served together in the County Commissioners Association. She was a county commissioner years ago, did an excellent job, moved on, and is now coming back into public service. Great. She was a great county commissioner. And I don't know if anybody can ever replace Michael Opaque, but if there's somebody that can, Judy's the person for it.
Yeah, I'm saying that, you know, and this is what I said for the last couple of days. This could be that moment where, you know, this is a repudiation of the governor's tax bill, of his budget, because her opponent, Medaglia, said that he supported the cuts to education. In fact, he welcomed it, he applauds it, and he thought everybody else did too. It appears that maybe they didn't.
Well, go back to what we talked about earlier. Is this, the folks who's listening that voted for Tom Corbett, is this what you voted for? He didn't talk about any of this during the campaign. I paid careful attention.
He didn't have to.
Oh, by the way, on a little tickling point, the lieutenant governor's budget went up $400,000 this year.
Yeah, I saw that.
But, you know, not that I'm jealous or anything like that, but maybe I am. But
they need to pay somebody to teach him how to do the job.
You see, because I was close to that one, I can't say anything about that. But I don't believe that the people of Pennsylvania voted for this. I don't believe they voted for the property to go up. I don't believe they voted to have their higher education cut. I don't believe this is what they voted for. And hopefully we're able to fight back over the next couple election cycles and get Pennsylvania back to where it has to be.
Yeah, I'm right there. I look at this, and it's one of these things that makes me just hopeful. I'm glad to see that Judy Schwenk won. This was an important one, and I do think it is. It is going to send a message that the people, at least in that area, said, not in favor of this budget at all. So let me ask you, where do we go from here? How do we fight all of these attacks? Because there are just so many. Everywhere I look, from every direction, you've got people as far out extreme as Daryl Metcalf putting out right to work for less legislation, taking away collective bargaining rights, all the insanity you're seeing in Ohio and Wisconsin and across the country. You've got this idea that we can privatize every function of government because Turd's Eye believes that none of this is the core functions of government. How do we fight back? Where do we start? I guess the question is, do you think what's going on in Wisconsin could come here?
We're a little bit more, well, no, I can't say this. Folks in Wisconsin never thought that would happen either. I don't believe Pennsylvania is ripe for that radicalism as what's happening out there. But at the same time, it's inch by inch. What I tell my friends back home, I drive a pickup truck. I hunt. I own a rifle. Guys, there's sometimes we go around and we hunt. There's sometimes we got to hit the streets. And it's hard to get my union brothers to understand, again, this isn't about your gun. Don't allow them. They talk about guns and they talk about personal issues in a way that's never, they scare you into voting a certain way. This is about your pocketbook.
Absolutely.
And I'm a businessman. And if somebody makes minimum wage, they can't afford to buy things. It is stupid, unrealistic way to be able to run business and to be able to run a government. We can't make people poor and expect the economy to increase. We can't raise property taxes and expect people to spend more money. We can't cut pays and cut jobs and expect the economy to turn around. What you're seeing this done is it's cutting jobs, it's raising taxes, and it's going directly after the middle class. And you, again, one more time, the middle class is going to have to take a bigger hit next year when you begin to see this happen. We can't sit back anymore. A year from now, we're going to have another election cycle. And that's the time we have to start now. If we wait till next year to come together, it's not going to happen. Now's the year we're going to start. This is just a little whisper, or this is just a little insight of what's about to happen. If this is his first budget, get ready for the next seven after this, if you believe in the cycle. If this is his first budget, we are 22 down in the House of Representatives. We're 20 down in the Senate, and they got the governor. My friends, I got news for you. As a union member, there's not a darn thing we can do to stop them.
Yeah, what I've been saying, the phrase I've been using is, you know, since we don't seem to have a seat at the table, if we're not sitting at the table, we're on the menu.
They won't even allow us to run amendments. They want to change the House rules. They want to take people off committees. They do a thing what's called it's not germane. If it's an amendment that they can't allow their members to vote no to because it's a good amendment, they call it not germane. Since they hold a 22-vote edge, germane means it's not relevant.
Right.
And it's things such as the reforms they did. It's not reforms. They took our bills from last year and took the meat out of them. So, you know, things such as if you work securing a contract. So if Rick Smith would work securing a $10 billion contract with Scott Conklin, Rick can't quit the legislature or quit as a staff person the day after this contract's awarded and come to work for me. We wanted to stop that. They pulled it out. They said it wasn't germane to a reform bill because they want to be able
but
to go to work.
At some point, don't you, you know, and I guess, you know, I look at what happened in Wisconsin and in other states where the politicians said, you know what, we've got no voice, we've got no say, we're not seated at the table, and they're eating us. We're basically on the menu. We're gonna do something drastic to call attention to this. At some point, do the legislators here in Pennsylvania go, you know what, we have no voice. We're just gonna go back to our districts and spread the word.
We are. We're doing things like the Rick Smith Show. I mean, we're doing things back in district where we're fighting. I come from a university community, and in fact, I'm shocked. The people are doing something. Our local newspaper did a poll. They had about 5,000 people actually went online and voted. 75% of the people were against Governor Corbett's, you know, cutting to education. The Republican legislators up that way are now telling the university and the local people that they won't vote for that budget because they put their fingers in the wind. They figured out which way the wind was blowing, and they decided, well, you know what? This may not be a good for my reelection in a few months next year to vote
right.
for that.
I think you're absolutely right, though. And I do think he's going to steal from the public welfare department and put over to education.
What he's going to do is he cut it 50%. He's going to pull that $4 million back out of welfare. And he's going to pull it into education, and they cut them 25 or 30%, and the Republicans are going to say we won.
Yep.
At the same time, they're getting that $1 million from the gas company. And I'm not against gas. Don't take this at all. But it just infuriates me to know that you as a Pennsylvanian are paying a severance fee, and you're not getting any money for it.
We're already paying for it. You stick around. One last break. I got to get to this. I'm already late. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I got a couple minutes left with Scott. We'll be right back.
Blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
Amy Morton, Executive Director of CAIU, on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
Our workers' comp system is a confusing maze of rules, delays, and loopholes where workers struggle to collect what they are owed. Bills don't get paid, and families struggle to put food on the table after a serious work injury. What happens when you're injured on the job in Pennsylvania? Most people think you just apply for workers' comp and you'll get paid for lost time and your medical bills will be covered. Sadly, in Pennsylvania, that is not the case. The good news is, it doesn't have to be that way. Hi, I'm Ron Calhoun, and I'm a Central Pennsylvania workers' compensation attorney. It's my job to make sure injured workers receive the benefits they deserve. In the last 20 years, I have helped hundreds of Pennsylvania workers and their families after they've suffered from a work injury. If you've been injured on the job, I'd like the chance to show you how I might be able to do the same for you. Why not find out what you're rightfully owed? Call me at 717-695-4722. You have nothing to lose and much to gain. Call me at 695-4722.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
You know, we were in Wisconsin. You know, the sign that I kept seeing most often is, you know, there's some folks with a whole bunch of money, like the Koch brothers and the Mellenscaves and the Coors and all of the Waltons, all these families who have amassed enormous fortunes. And yet, as Warren Buffett points out, they pay less in tax than their secretaries do. Figure that one out. I've got Scott Conklin, state representative, sitting with me for a couple more minutes. You know, Scott, I'm looking at this whole Marcellus, this drilling thing. The fact that I already think we're way behind on regulating this, on knowing what's going on, way behind. I see this as the coal industry on steroids. We're so far behind. We're even worse off than we were back in during when coal was huge in this state.
You can double the steroids. It doesn't take nearly the manpower to be able to get the type of wealth they're getting from these. Remember, once they clear the pad, drill the hole, there is no man hours left. All what it is taking the profits from it. Again, I have no problem with the gas industry whatsoever. What I have a problem is that your local municipalities have to pay to upkeep the roads. By the way, when they say they bond those roads, they pay about $16,000 a mile. It costs $165,000 a mile to repave them. They're coming in. They're doing what any good businessman would do. You know what? You're making $4 billion a year. Spend $5, $6 million to buy some politicians.
And buy some ads on the radio.
Buy some ads. You don't have to pay taxes. But the problem is there are some really good gas companies out there before, you know, and, you know, I'm not bashing the gas companies at all. They're good people. But
I'm not bashing the
what
companies.
What I'm bashing is
they're doing what they can get away with.
What I'm bashing, oh, they're doing what any businessman would do.
Absolutely.
You know, you get what you pay for. These guys have paid top dollar. And guess what they've got? They've got damn good lobbyists called
Tom
politicians
Ridge.
Sitting inside the Capitol making sure that they don't have to pay taxes. They get what they're paid for. You pay top dollar, you get the best.
You don't have any, you know, for the environmental folks that are listening, you don't have any reservations about the drilling at all?
Oh, absolutely I have reservations about drilling. I mean, let's get it right. We're drilling all over and we're understaffed on DEP. We can't keep track of all these wells. We have, in Tioga County, here's a favorite story I like to tell. Tioga County, we had an explosion. The brine water went all over the ground. They had to kill the cows because it caused cancer in people. In Clearfield County, where we hunt, I'm in Center County, but I hunt in Clearfield County. We had the same exact thing happen. The deer graze, but you know what? We get to shoot them and eat them. Now, there's a little bit of a problem.
Well, you're just hunters. You're disposable.
Yeah. You know, they're the ones that are voting for to save the guns too, but there's a problem. And the problem is that you have good gas companies, but you have bad gas companies as well. Believe it or not, the good gas companies want these guys regulated.
Sure.
And they're willing to pay a severance fee. They want to pay a severance fee because one, they want to make they want the bad guys taken out of the equation. It's believe it or not, it's good business as well. It's less competition, but the guys are still breaking the rules. The second thing we have to do in Pennsylvania is that the discharge water is a problem. We've come up. I sit on the environmental committee. We put bills and actually take the discharge water, retreat it on site, take it to a treatment site, almost all but 0.1% of it can be used for actually the salt that's sprayed on the highways. But totally, it doesn't hurt the environment. Less than 0.1% of the metals go to the landfill. We're not doing that. We're injecting it into the ground. We're storing it. We can't get them to tell us what's in their substance because they say
it's proprietary
to it. We've got a problem in Pennsylvania. We've got a huge problem. I grew up in coal industry territory, where you can't fish in the streams and the hillsides are ruined. When you look at Eric Epstein, if you ever had Eric on the show or if you talked to Eric.
Rock the Capitol. In fact, this Friday we're going to be doing an event with the folks over at Rock
well,
the Capitol.
Well, ask Eric to show you how the gas companies follow the same trends of the iron and the coal and the forestry to where they come in. This is about jobs. They totally go in. They destroy the environment. And guess who pays for it after the fact?
We do. The people left here.
That's exactly right. You pay for it after the fact. This is running the same route. We have an opportunity to do it right. And if we do it right, it'll be good for generations. And at the end of the day, it'll be good for everybody across the board. We're trying to the governor got rid of the moratorium on state forest lands.
I was going to ask you about that. We had Representative Vitale here last night and talking about the moratorium. Are you part of that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's start with folks. Don't let them tell you they have to do it. They're only using a few percent of the lease what they have out today to start with. And if you're truly the American entrepreneur, why do you want government competing with private business? Why do you want private landowners to get a lower price for leasing their property? Because if you're getting it from the government at a cheap rate, why do you want to go to the private sector and be able to do it? So if you're a citizen out there and you own property, you better be against the government handing it over for free because you deserve to make top dollar off your property.
Absolutely. Anyway, Scott Conklin, I appreciate your time. Always great having you in here. Look forward to having you back again as often as you're willing to come across the street here and sit down with us. Thank you.
Well, thank you. You know, it was a whole block, but it was good.
Representative Scott Conklin, I would love to see you in 3.5 years run for governor. That would be a great thing. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the job action up in the Poconos. I think it's going to be an interesting discussion. And when we come right back after this, Neil Bisno, president of HCPA Healthcare Pennsylvania, right back after this.
Smith Show, changing America for the better. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to Win
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Thousands of people are gathering in Lansing, Michigan today for a big rally protesting an outrageous Republican political attack on working families, seniors, and the poor. Governor Rick Snyder and Republicans controlling Michigan's legislature are pushing through 40 different anti-worker, anti-union bills. The most sweeping may be the Emergency Manager's Bill, a financial martial law that allows governor-appointed corporate managers to literally take over local governments, dissolve them, destroy all collective bargaining contracts, and even oust elected local officials. OPEIU Vice President Joe Marudiak is in Lansing today for that rally.
It is martial law, and the local officials should be just as upset about it as the unions are, because it takes power away from the people themselves, the people who have elected someone to represent them, and gives it to one individual.
Marudiak says the labor movement is more energized than he's seen it in 30 years.
Well, I've been doing this 30 years, and I've never seen this level of energy. I wish we would have had it when the PATCO strike happened, but it's happening now, and people are drawing a line in the sand. And I think it's wonderful, and it shows a lot about the next generation coming up, saying, you know, we're not going to let these rights be taken away.
In addition to attacking working families and unions, Governor Snyder is cutting taxes for corporations in Michigan while increasing personal taxes by 31%, including taxes on seniors and the poor. As many as 50 managers are being trained to take over local governments when Michigan's governor signs that emergency manager's bill. Jesse Russell has more.
The legislation allows the state to appoint the managers in municipalities and school districts that are facing insolvency. The managers would have broad authority, including the power to strip labor contracts and usurp the decisions of elected officials. The state has allegedly been in the process of training more than 50 managers as the debate raged on over the proposals. Michigan State Senator Gretchen Whitmer spoke out against the legislation last week, as it also provides $1.8 billion in tax cuts for businesses.
The current job creation policy is to create so many taxpayer-funded millionaires in the state of Michigan. How on earth is that shared sacrifice? Today, my colleagues on the other side of the aisle say it's okay for an individual to come in to a community or into our schools and make $1 million on the backs of the taxpayers.
This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. You know, I got to tell you, I really like that guy. I would have loved to have seen him as Lieutenant Governor instead of the guy who reminds me of Mr. Bean, who's the current Lieutenant Governor. Amazing, amazing stuff. So I guess that's what elections are about. Anyway, today we were up in the Poconos, up in the Stroudsburg area. The workers at the Pocono Medical Center took to the street today to have their voices heard, and I got to be honest, you know, it was one of those moments. Again, as I've said, it restores my faith in humanity to see people sticking together and standing together for a common cause. Anyway, Neil Bisnos, the president of Healthcare Pennsylvania, HCPA, he's also their president up there. Neil, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for being out there with us today and having us on your show tonight.
Yeah, you know, I look at that and what I've been saying, it's you know, for me, it's one of those rejuvenative moments where you're seeing people coming together. I mean, so much has been put in to dividing people To see a good group of folks come together and stand together for a common cause, to me, a very good thing.
Well, it's extremely exciting. I can't tell you how proud we are of our members of SEIU Healthcare Pennsylvania at Pocono Medical Center, who really are fighting a battle not just for themselves and for their rights and their futures and their patients' futures, but really fighting a battle for all working people in that community and part of the nationwide fight back against the assault on workers' rights and the assault on the middle class in this country. I really feel like they've taken great inspiration from the workers in Wisconsin and Ohio. They've been watching it very, very closely, and I really feel like corporate America has really badly miscalculated in thinking that they could attack workers' rights and it wouldn't lead to workers standing up in great numbers and defending those rights. And it was a wonderful day today, and workers were really united, really determined, and proud of standing up for themselves and for quality jobs and workers' rights in their community. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, walk me through this though. What's happened that's led us to this point? I mean, you know, I've said a strike is one of those moments where you need an infusion. You need to get somebody's attention, maybe to jumpstart negotiations, bring people back to the table. What got us to this point?
Well, I gotta say, I've been working in the labor movement in one form or other since 1989. And I would say that the situation at Pocono Medical Center is quite extraordinary. We've certainly in our union had many battles, many fights, and in some cases strikes, but this one is really striking, so to speak, to use a bad pun, in the sense that the workers here voted to form their union 4 years ago. They defeated a very nasty anti-union campaign where the hospital spent $500,000 over 4 weeks' time on a union buster to try to stop them from forming a union. They beat back the consultants and the union busters, won their union, negotiated a first contract with Union Shop, where everybody's covered by the union and everybody's the members of the union, and they've had a union shop ever since. The registered nurses at the hospital also have a union. I've had a union shop for many, many years. And the hospital has tried every day since they won their union to divide them and take that away from them and bust their union. And last fall, there was an election held at the hospital 4 or 5 days before their contract expired, in which the workers voted in an NLRB, federal government supervised election, on the question of shall we keep our union shop and have a strong union here or not. They voted overwhelmingly to keep their union shop. Those results have been certified by the National Labor Relations Board. And yet management, in their arrogance, has refused to accept the results of that election and is demanding really a right to work open shop contract where workers are divided and weak. And obviously they're on a campaign simply to get rid of the union and take away the gains that the workers have made. It really in some ways is very similar to Wisconsin, because this is not a fight that's about wages and benefits fundamentally. It's really about workers' rights and whether they are going to have a voice on the job and a strong union and have collective bargaining in their workplace and their lives. And at the same time, it's different in that, while you can argue and many of us have vociferously argued against the attack on workers' rights in Wisconsin, it is true that they have a budget deficit. That much we know. At Pocono, they're not suffering from any budget deficit. The hospital made record profits last year, yet the workers struggled to make ends meet. But it really is just about corporate arrogance and a hospital management refusing to accept the vote and the voice of its frontline caregivers. It's really pretty astounding.
It does sound astounding. And what it focuses me on is the fact that we've got serious problems, serious flaws in our labor laws that need reform and need quickly.
Well, that's for sure. The labor law, the hospital has been, the National Labor Relations Board, I should say, has issued complaints against the hospital for interfering with workers' rights to talk about workplace issues on their own time in the cafeteria in the hospital, which is, sort of good commentary on the hospital's lack of respect for the employees. But the truth is, the labor board doesn't provide workers strong enough protection. The labor law does not. We need to strengthen them. And, many of us have learned and studied the history that labor law in this country wasn't established by lobbying. The lobbying is extremely important, and we do a lot of that in our union. But the truth is we won labor law reform and workers' rights in this country after workers were out on the streets fighting for those rights, fighting for social justice. And we have to remember that if we want to change the legislation, we have to change the political climate in this country. And that means workers getting in the streets as they are in Wisconsin, Ohio, and now in East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, and standing up for a different kind of America and building community support and popular support for a real middle class in this country.
Yeah, because as I was standing there talking to the people who were on strike, who were fighting for their jobs, I was also talking to people who were going by. And the support that I saw from the community, the people passing by, was extremely strong. And I got to be honest, having spent some time up in that area, that was kind of surprising. So it's telling me that people are, I think, as you pointed out, starting to come around to the idea that we need to come together and really exercise the word solidarity.
Well, it was so apparent today. You know, there was a big group of workers. I mean, you're absolutely right. Workers were getting thumbs up and honks all day long from people in the community. And this is not an area that is it's a resort community historically. It's changing a lot. There's a lot of in-migration from New York and New Jersey, but it really is not historically a highly unionized community at all. It's not like some other communities in Pennsylvania with a strong union tradition. But there's tremendous community support. And you know, it reminds me a lot of, I think, what we've all seen in the fights in Wisconsin and Ohio, which is when workers stand up and fight and get attention on this issue, it causes people to take a step back and think about issues like collective bargaining. How do we have a middle class in this country, workers' rights? And as the polls coming out of Wisconsin and the whole country have shown, and as the support on the line today showed, the vast majority of Americans do believe that working people deserve to have a voice at work, that that's morally right and it's good for our economy. And so these fights are really important in sort of galvanizing public opinion, I think, and sparking the debate that we need to have in this country about the future of working class America.
I agree. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Neil Bisnow, president of SEIU Healthcare PA. You know, Neil, going forward from this point today, I would say was a rousing success, a remarkable day. Tomorrow you're going to have another day of events. Where does this strike take us? Where do you see it going from here?
Well, we do have a series of events over the course of the next few days planned, capping off with a rally Thursday evening at the CLU Social Club on South Cortland Street in East Stroudsburg, not too far from the hospital. You know, we also were really grateful today that we were able to publish a newspaper ad in the paper with signatures from many statewide and local elected officials, from the mayor of East Stroudsburg through state reps and senators and statewide elected officials like Jack Wagner and Rob McCord and others, as well as a whole bunch of labor leaders. So there has been a lot of activity, and we're expecting a number of those folks to be out or send representatives to the rally on Thursday. And in the meantime, we'd love for any folks who are listening in the Stroudsburg area to stop by and walk with us for half an hour or 20 minutes or send a pizza out to the picket line. And, you know, we hope that this is the beginning of a process of settling this issue. I mean, the last thing healthcare workers or any workers ever want to do is have to be out on strike. They'd much rather be caring for their patients and at their jobs inside the hospital. And we hope that the board of the hospital, which is ultimately responsible for what happens there, will recognize that it's really irresponsible for management to be forcing disruption of healthcare services in this community over an ideological issue that really should be up to the workers to decide. And that we can get some movement, get a contract resolved, get management to start obeying the labor law and respecting workers, and again focusing on what's truly important in this hospital, which is providing the very best patient care
and giving these workers the voice in how that's done and how that's accomplished. That to me is paramount. Neil Bisnow, I look forward to getting reports back over the next couple of days as this moves forward. I wish you guys nothing but the absolute best. Keep up the fight, and as they say, one day longer.
Thank you so much, Rick, and we really appreciate your contribution to the airwaves. It is so gratifying to know that there are progressive voices and vehicles for getting real working class voices out there, because there's so much of the opposite. And thank you so much for all the work you do on behalf of all of your viewers.
Thanks so much,
or your
Neil.
Listeners, I should say.
I appreciate your time, sir. Thank you so much.
Great.
And again, best of luck. You know, I look at this, and, you know, it was an amazing event. It was a fantastic event. And tomorrow, another day full. I'm hoping this does what it's supposed to do. which is to kind of wake up management and get them back to the table. Because as I've been saying, you know, if you're not seated at the table, you're probably on the menu. We're right back after this.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show. The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
The greatest problem our nation faces can be summed up in one word: leadership. Okay, make that three words: lack of leadership. America's corporate, political, media, academic, and other leaders aren't. They're not leaders because they refuse to stand tall, be bold, offer vision, inspire, and, well, lead. We've got too many 5-watt bulbs sitting in 100-watt sockets. They're squishing the historic can-do spirit of the American people, reducing it to a dispiriting ethic of surrender that says we shouldn't even try. Start with our leaders' willful abdication of the American dream. They've given up on the notion of producing a shared prosperity that creates a broad middle class. For more than a decade now, Wall Street and Washington have let millions of jobs disappear and pushed wages down. They now yawn at the entrenched jobs crisis that is eating the middle class, and rather than responding to the plight of millions of hard-hit families, they're trying to bust unions and kill minimum wage laws. They call it the new normal, in which the workaday majority of folks should simply ratchet down their hopes and expectations. A national commitment to quality education, health care for all, and a decent retirement has been reduced to a yo-yo program. You're on your own. What about creating a vibrant new green economy based on renewable energy? Let China build it, they shrug. How about constructing a bold nationwide job-creating network of high-speed trains? Spain built a great one, and even France has one, but we're told it's too much for America. Our deteriorating and dangerous infrastructure? Better that we cut taxes for the super rich and pray for God to take care of infrastructure. This is Jim Hightower saying, these people are pathetic and shameful. You can't call yourself a leader if you're too weak and too afraid to lead.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
A new Washington Post ABC poll out. Says a large majority of Americans believe tax hikes should accompany spending cuts to cut into the federal deficit. In fact, 64% say deficit cutting should comprise a combination of spending cuts and tax increases. Only 31% thought that cutting was the right path. We're, oddly enough, 3%. Said that tax increases alone would cover the budget. So, you know, I look at that, 3%, and I say, you know, the right has done a masterful job. The wealthy in this country have done a masterful job of convincing the working class, the working poor especially, that they're going to have to pitch in during this time of need, this time that the very wealthy created. Amazing stuff. Projected deficit, is going to be $1.5 trillion for 2011. And what's interesting is, you know, both Democratic and Republican leaders have basically taken any tax increases off the table. And their efforts have been focused completely on what discretionary programs we're going to slash and burn. And the reality is, survey after survey has really shown that the general public supports increasing taxes on the very, very wealthy, which seems like a reasonable idea to do. You know, if we're going to have to struggle, we're going to have to suffer, let's spread the pain. Remember last week we talked about a bill that Senator Bernie Sanders wanted to push That would raise somewhere around $50 billion in revenues by taxing the millionaire class. You know, just bumping it up about 5%, which seems very reasonable to me. You know, if children are going to have to go without education and granny's going to eat cat food and we're going to see all of these draconian cuts, the least that can happen is Warren Buffett and David Tepper and the very wealthy contribute a little bit more. What do you think?
And I'm sure he didn't get a lot of support. And just to make a comment on what you said, the Republicans haven't done a good job, and I'll tell you what, they're probably a little more disciplined. Again, every day, literally, when I say every day, I mean every day, I hear one of the Republican leaders say there needs to be shared sacrifice. And they have persuaded the majority of the Americans that, you know, we all got to give. Because they have theirs.
Yeah, you got to give them credit, man, because they're on message. Yeah, you got to give them credit.
Absolutely are. Again.
And we've bought it. And again, I go back to this idea that at some point, instead of eating each other, shouldn't we be looking for bigger dinners, bigger meals? You look at the fact, and the numbers are there, that productivity has gone through the roof. Workers are working harder, longer, and for less money and less benefits and less of everything. Less job satisfaction, more stress, less health care, which, you know, the two kind of problematic there. At some point, there's a breaking point. And I don't know that we're at that point yet, but I think we're coming close. I think when you see what's going on in Wisconsin and you mm-hmm. see the draconian plan that they've come up with, the imperialistic plan that the people in Michigan are going to be saddled with, mm-hmm. where the king of Michigan is going to be able to appoint their czar to take over communities. Tomorrow night we're going to talk to the president of the Michigan AFL-CIO to get his take on what their governor's doing out there. But, you know, you look at this and it's just mind-blowing, state after state. And as Scott Conklin said, this isn't stuff that just popped up in all these different states. This is a concerted effort. This is a master plan to overthrow this country. This is a plan for business to take over. And this idea that, what did Corbett say? Business is what the country is about? No. It's not what the country is about.
If you do an investigation into what powers it gives them, they can literally eliminate political subdivisions.
Oh, they do away with everything.
By a fiat.
Absolutely.
Of the financial czar. You talk about undemocratic. I'm sure if you ask the people who voted for, just like many states, if you ask the average even Republican, let's be fair, let's say you take a survey of the average Republican, very, very few of them would approve of what this governor is doing.
I don't know about that. I think they would approve. Because it's their guy doing it.
If they know the whole story.
They don't care. It's their guy doing it, so they're happy. It's a Republican who's sticking it to me, so that's okay.
Well,
I know folks who are like this. You know, I went to breakfast the other morning, and I sat and I talked to a couple of people at the counter, Jake, and there were people who were okay with Corbett's budget because he's a Republican doing it, so it must be okay.
And because the Republicans have done a great job calling Governor Rendell Spendell. Now, do you and I disagree with Mr. Spendell, Governor Rendell, on some things? Yes. But he's also done a decent job in a lot of areas. But they have their Republicans convinced that, well, he just, you know, he spent the whole House, which he actually didn't. I mean, he was what he is. He ran Pennsylvania like he ran the city of Philadelphia. He was a moderate Democrat.
And he was no friend to labor either. I shouldn't say that. He wasn't your best friend, but he wasn't your enemy either on a lot of things. Anyway, you know, right now I'm kind of thinking that the governor is breaking his anti-tax pledge. And help me here if you think I'm wrong. The Patriot has come out with a story that said that the state's Department of Revenue plans to step up its efforts to go after uncollected use tax. By adding a line on the state's PA 40 tax return starting next year, so that taxpayers would report this use tax. Acting Revenue Secretary Dan Muser told a House panel on Monday that they were going to go after this. The use tax is a 6% tax that applies to purchases subject to the state sales tax that are bought from out-of-state retailers, including purchases made online, according to the Patriot News. They say that taxpayers presently have to fill out a separate form to report and remit tax use tax, although most people don't. They're saying that they're going to be part of this consortium of states that have done this, that have gone after, especially online stuff, because you've got these businesses who, you know, sell online. There's some tax revenue to be there. So it's I'm kind of saying, you know, this is a tax that goes after you and me. This is a tax increase.
Well, what it does, they mutually cooperate with each other. They will do it for them. They do it for us. Does it technically violate his pledge? Well, it probably does, but you know what? He's already violated his pledge on numerous levels. I mean, literally every week there's another, you know, another aspect of his budget that we realize, you know, this pledge of no new taxes is just simply false. It just isn't true.
So, yesterday, you want to talk about insane Republicans? Yesterday, during a Kansas State House Appropriations Committee hearing on the state's spending to control feral swine, Republican, and it's kind of interesting, for Republican State Representative Virgil Peck suggested that hunters could shoot undocumented immigrants like they do with the pigs in order to control them. Here's what he said. And again, you know, I listen to this and they go, really? I guess it is what it is, man.
Representative Peck on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was also on the committee report, but I had a question on the amendment, some of this information that was handed out. Looks like to me if shooting these immigrating feral hogs works, maybe we have found a problem to our illegal immigration problem.
Oh, he's just cracking people up. That's a good joke, isn't it, Jake?
No, not really.
Christian nation.
No,
a Christian nation just comes to mind. Christian nation.
You know, I don't care if he was joking, if he was serious, or somewhere in between. When someone says that in the halls of government, there are going to be certain people who take that as tacit approval to take it to the next step.
So the good representative was asked by the Lawrence Journal World to apologize, and he said, nope, not going to do it. I was just speaking like a southeastern Kansas person, he said. The Kansas blog Dome on the Range has the audio clip that you just heard. And I go, you know, maybe we've got some looking inward to do. Maybe we've got to start looking at ourselves and go, you know, really, these are the people we want to be voting for. And you know, there's some folks here, you know, in this state that I don't think are too far off of that path.
No, you're right about that.
Yeah, you know, that Metcalf guy to me is just nuts. Off the path.
Well, path. I find Terzai and his attitude a real threat. Not only a real threat to workers, I find his attitude a real threat to the democratic process. I mean, they're coming in here, guns a-blazing, and they're saying that, well, you know, the people of Pennsylvania put us in here to make changes. As if to say that whatever we do is okay. Whether we run roughshod over people's rights, whether we run roughshod over established precedent, like he did about a month ago and got soundly spanked over it. Those kind of people, I find them dangerous because they will do whatever they can do and are allowed to get away with. And I don't think fairness or democracy or precedent have anything to do with it. It's about sheer political ideology.
Yep. Amazing stuff. Anyway, let's take a quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Curious what your thoughts are. Right back after this.
And it all crashes down. And you break your vow. And you break your vow.
Majority. Greg Smith.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, Ask Me Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
At PSECU, we know those holiday bills can really pile up and hit you with double-digit interest rates or fees that start to snowball. Next thing you know, you're buried in a mountain of debt. Dig out by using our 3.9 annual percentage rate Visa balance transfer. Good through December 31st, 2012. That's a really big deal. And you heard that right. Our really big deal, 3.9% APR, is good through December 31st, 2012, and we don't charge you a balance transfer fee. So if you used any other credit card to pay for your holiday purchases, move those high interest rate balances to your PSEC Visa. The sooner you get in on this really big deal, the more you'll save. Financing Life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to PSEC.com/life. Get in on our really big deal Visa balance transfer. Don't wait. Start saving.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
One 888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can go to the website, download our terrific podcast, take it with you. It's there for your ease, convenient, enjoyment, entertainment. It's there for you. Last night we talked about Michelle Bachmann, and she made some really dumb statements over the weekend. Again, not the brightest bulb in the box, but, you know, like I said, I love crazy. Anyway, she got upset saying, you know, that it's the media's fault. Blame it on the media. She said that her screw up was only reported because she's conservative. Only because she's a conservative did it matter that she's completely dead wrong. She was on the Laura Ingraham show, and she said, "We all know there's a double standard in the media. As we know, all 3,400 members of the mainstream media are part of the Obama press contingent." One, there are only 3,400 members of the media? I'd like to see where that comes from. Show me the documentation on that. Anyway, what she said, if you don't remember, she said, talking to the people of New Hampshire, She said, "You're the state where the shot was heard round the world in Lexington and Concord." Problem was, she was, yes, again, in New Hampshire, not Massachusetts. She was all upset because the media reported on her on the fact that she's dumber than a fifth grader. And went to try and justify her screw-up, she said, "Well, you know, the media didn't make such a fuss when Obama said 10,000 people died in a Kansas tornado or that he visited 57 states. They didn't report that." Yes, they did, Michelle. And you know how I know that they reported it? Because I know he said those things. I generally don't run in the insane conservative circles, so the mainstream media had to report on it because I heard it. But she said, you know, only if a conservative makes a misstep is it considered interesting. No, it's interesting when you made it twice and you wrote it down and put it on a teleprompter. Off the cuff, look, I'm no great historian. I'm not going to tell you I'm smarter than anybody else. But when you sat down and you wrote it out and you put it on the teleprompter and you read it from the screen, not once, but twice, I think that's news.
Well, here's what's important. You know, forget about Republican, Democrat, conservative, or liberal. If you want to run for president, don't you think that you should have enough respect for the history of your country to know a little bit about it? Do you think?
Easy.
Do you think?
You just made people drive off the road. Easy.
And here's the irony. I heard this theory before, and you know, I do believe it. I think we often talk about how did she get elected?
She's in an insane
and then
district.
Then we talk about Sarah, your girlfriend from Alaska, Sarah
hey,
Palin.
Sarah.
And we wonder how she can be popular. But I do believe there's a certain segment of the population out there that is anti-intellectual. And that, they like to relate to these people as, oh, she's a mother.
Well, like I said.
And she has two daughters like I do. And, you know, she goes to work every day, and she's just one of us. Forget about what she says isn't accurate. Forget about the fact that she isn't qualified. They believe that she's being attacked simply because she is who she is, and they relate to that.
Well, like I said before, you know, I have a friend who sits in front of the TV with his TV tray and goes, look, Ma, she's stupid like me. And you're right. I agree with you. There are folks who love that anti-intellectual part of her person. Scary, scary stuff. Anyway, Bachman was asked about Mitt Romney because they're trying to tear down the other Republican presidential candidates. Of course, she dodged the question by saying, again, I'm not focused on politics. I'm focused on the policy and trying to get the country turned back around. And just so you know, Romney was the governor of New Hampshire. Thought you'd fool me again, huh? No, she didn't say that. I just added it. Just added it.
Well, I wasn't quite sure.
Yeah, well, you never know.
She said so many dumb things.
You never know.
I have to be honest, nothing would surprise me anymore.
No. Speaking of Mitt Romney, evidently the Mittster is getting some money from billionaire David Koch. He was among a small group of multi-billionaires quietly pushing Mitt Romney, kind of, you know, helping him out, giving him some money, hosting a couple events at their little homes and... So there's a good thing. And also, the Koch brothers have been giving money to Haley Barbour, governor of Mississippi and former Republican Governor Association chairman and lobbyist. But Barbour has taken $1 million from David Koch, $25,000 from Koch Industries, $625,000 from ExxonMobil, over $150,000 from Chevron, $50,000 from Shell, $25,000 from ConocoPhillips. So I'm guessing he's going to be the oil industry, the petrochemical industry candidate. So it's kind of interesting to see how this is all kind of playing out. And I think we got to pay attention to the people who are running on the Republican side, because if you look at what's going on, the fact that we're not getting anywhere near getting away from oil. Look who's got the money and look where it's going.
Well, don't you think that a lot of them, they cover their bases?
Sure they do.
Anybody that they think
has a chance. They've got enough of our money, they can spread it around.
Well, here's the thing. You don't, I don't have a clue, especially as what's happening in the Republican Party. I really don't have a clue who's going to win on their side. I really don't. I think Romney's the most formidable candidate. Intellectual.
They're gonna tear him down.
And the irony is I think they're gonna self destruct because I think he won't pass the right wing litmus test. But I do believe he's the strongest candidate.
He's a Mormon.
I don't think it's pure ideology, Rick. I think it's the healthcare thing.
Wow.
I don't think they're gonna forgive him on that.
Well, we'll see. Anyway, Newt Gingrich was on the radio again here today, and the interview asked him, "Say, hey, you know, you got any excuses? You know, you gonna offer up any excuses for what you've done? You know, your past extramarital affairs and stuff." And the Newtster said, "I'm not blaming my life on anyone. I'm not offering excuses. I've made no bones about the fact that there were times I did the wrong thing, and I've made no bones about the fact that I've asked for forgiveness. I'm kind of wondering, because I went home, I asked my wife, and it didn't fly. I went home and I said, Newt said that he cheated on his wives because he loved his country and he worked so hard. I said to my wife, I work really hard. I spend a lot of time at work. I spend a lot of time doing this, and I love my country. Would that give me a pass? And she said, it would give you a pass right out the front door onto the curb, yes. So maybe this would work. Maybe this, to make no bones about the fact that I would make mistakes and then ask for forgiveness. And then just by the sheer fact, of course, of asking, I would be magically forgiven. Magically forgiven.
I got a question. I know that's probably unfair of me, but how does he mix the two? One, he was an idolater. Two, he loved this country. Did I miss something there?
But he's not
did
giving
his patriotism. Not giving did his patriotism force him to have an affair with someone he wasn't married to?
Yes. No, they were walking down the street. They tripped, and it just happened. It's like, you remember that commercial? Do you remember the commercial when that place you used to work at with those cups with the peanut butter and the chocolate, and they explained how it happened? And somebody just dropped the chocolate bar and it fell into the peanut butter. That's how it happened. Just like that. Now, both people were walking down the street loving their country, and they tripped and they fell. And
the immaculate marriage.
There you go. My problem is not about his bedroom habits, though. I have none of my concern. My problem is when you hold yourself out as the person to follow me and I know the way and all that and. Because I do remember the whole persecution of Clinton. And I do remember the Newtster being out there constantly throwing bombs at him for his infidelity. While he's doing it, that's the part that drives me nuts. He was out there pointing the finger going, Clinton's a bad guy. Clinton's screwing around on his wife. The thing is the guy had three fingers pointing back at him because he was doing it for years. That's my problem with Gingrich.
But he had bigger kahunas than that. Then he went to the hospital to get his wife, who he wanted to divorce, to sign a divorce decree while she had cancer. And did she die then? Please, she might have died around. The point is that, wow, that takes huge kahunas.
Yeah. Anyway, during the same interview, someone called in, and well, let me play the clip for you because I think it's a. This is my. You want to know what my problem with Newt Gingrich is? This caller and this response is my problem.
Donald. Hi, Newt. Back in the 90s, I remember Ross Perot saying that there was going to be the giant sucking sound of jobs if NAFTA passed. I think it ended up being true, right? And I know you were a big free trader.
Yeah. No, I don't think it was true in Mexico. I think the fact is that NAFTA enabled us to build jobs in Canada, the United States, and Mexico in competition with China. Our big competitor is not Mexico. Our big competitor is China and India. And I'd rather have jobs close to the United States than have jobs overseas in places like China and India. And that's why I was in favor of it. And I think on balance, look at who our biggest customers are. Our biggest customers are Canada and Mexico. They buy more American products than other countries do. So, in a sense, I'd like our neighborhood to be fairly well off and fairly prosperous. And I really worry about the drug war that's underway in Mexico. And I think it's very dangerous for us as a country to have a neighborhood which is in this much trouble.
So I played you the whole clip. But at the end of it, this rationale that, and I love it, I would rather have the jobs closer to the United States. Granted, they're not paying reasonable wages. They're exploited jobs. They're subpar wage jobs in a country that's in the midst of a civil war. They were taken from this country that actually had solid middle class wages. And the wealth from those jobs went upward, which is why we have this huge divide. This guy has no problem with that, Jake. Nothing whatsoever.
I've never heard that explanation before. It's an immaculate trade policy.
I forgive him for his infidelities with his wife because I don't have a dog in the fight. That's between him and all of the line of people that he's done what he's done with. This, to me, is personal. This is what's important. And this is what the Republican Party, and to a large extent, the Democratic Party, stood for, this whole NAFTA free trade, oh, we got to open our borders. And right now we're talking about three more insane trade agreements that the Republicans are basically strong-arming Obama over about his nominee for the Commerce Secretary. And Obama wants it with them anyway. So, I mean, you and I, we're kind of screwed in all this. This is where I think working people should be putting their energy. Telling politicians, oh, we want trade policy that's going to benefit us. And this is what I thought the Tea Party was going to be all on board on. Turns out they're not. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this. Red blues is too. I see their blue.
It is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME, Consult 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
You go back to that, and Ross Perot was right. There was a massive sucking sound of jobs out of this country. Every state in this country and the District of Columbia have lost jobs because of NAFTA. This was a massive transfer of wealth, and it's what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be how it was sold on the right was, hey, this is a great opportunity to exploit some cheap labor, make big profits, bring your products back here to the U.S. and Canada, sell them for the same price you've been selling them for, and pocket a bunch of coin. Your stock prices will go up, your investors will be happy, the wealth class was thrilled. It was sold to the liberal elite as we're gonna raise Mexico's standard of living, they're going to be like us. We're going to bring them up. We're going to help. A rising tide lifts all boats. Problem is, didn't happen. And, you know, the working people were screaming, hey, wait a minute. We can't compete with them. Can't happen. You can't put people in that kind of situation because it's going to bring us all down. We're all going to come down. And that's what's happened. I mean, across the board. You've seen industry after industry leave. You've seen industry after industry not only just leave to Mexico, but then from Mexico to China. This whole free trade race to the bottom nonsense was really rammed down the working class of this country's throat and sold to us with a whole bunch of sugar. And it, honestly, it has not worked.
Down Cleveland, and as you, when you were growing up, how industrialized and how unionized it was. What's the difference between Pennsylvania and Ohio now and 15 years ago as a state? The big, big difference is the number of jobs in industrial manufacturing base, Pennsylvania. Now, NAFTA was passed in, I believe, 94, but till it cranked up. And it really got started right around 2000 when it started really biting. And since 2000 to now, Pennsylvania has lost over 70% of its industrial base. Ohio, unbelievably, was hurt even more. Of the two states, probably in 94, Rick, were the most heavily industrialized at that point. Probably two of the five, maybe even the two biggest industrialized states at that time. And now, look at the economic devastation. Directly attributed to failed economic policies and targeted in on the free trade agreements.
And now what they're telling us, oh, we got to go further because other countries are going to beat us to these wonderful deals. Well, what wonderful deals? You know, I go back to this premise: are you a worker or are you a consumer? And I would say, you know, it's one of those horse and cart things. You know, you can't be a consumer until you got a job, until you got money in your pocket. So, again, you know, when I talk about things, I talk about, you know, voting on your job and voting on industry to stay here. We have the ability to dictate what happens in our country. We're not beholden to corporate special interests unless we choose to be. And that's what's happened here. We've spent all of our time listening to these idiots talking about how the free market is so wonderful and how, oh, the free market economy and corporations are so wonderful. And look, there are some good corporations, and for the most part, the free market economy works, but there are parts of it that we should be looking at. And, you know, when someone hears me say that, they're like, oh, you're just anti-corporation, anti-free market. No, I'm pro-reality. I'm in favor of looking at things and going, gee, how do we make that a little bit better so that it works for everybody and not just a handful?
No, I think you and I are both opposed to unfettered capitalism with no controls. It's called laissez-faire. It has never worked. You have to have responsible controls on that.
And it's never happened. I mean, you've never really had that. You always have one entity that's powerful enough to control government to make things work in their favor and monopolize things. You've never had this total free open market. Right. It's one of those models that we all wish. Oh, gee, wouldn't it be great if that model were perfect?
Well, I mean, if you have any questions, who's this going to benefit? I mean, the one bright spot is, Rick, the labor organizations in these countries, all three of them. You know, you look at it and they're saying, hey, we don't want it. The workers who are supposed to benefit, weren't we told? Oh, we need this free trade, and it's, you know, workers in both countries are going to prosper. Both economies are going to prosper. It has never happened. It has never happened. They've been exploited. Look at Mexico. Classic example.
But, you know, all those workers who come across, well, we need to shoot them out of helicopters, like the guy in Kansas says. Can you believe? I mean, I go back to that. I go, you know, we call ourselves a Christian nation. Really? Really? And that guy's not tarred and feathered? He's probably actually going to get a book deal now. You watch. Probably actually get a pat on the back or something out of this. I don't know. You know, I sometimes you often wonder. And, you know, you look at the reality is, and you cannot have an... I sat down the other day at the lunch counter to have breakfast. And sometimes I like to do that. Sometimes I just want to hear what people are saying and maybe, you know, chime in a little bit. And they were talking about the budget, and they're talking about, oh, we need to cut these welfare programs and make them lazy people go to work. And, you know, it always turns into those, you know, and you know what they're talking about. It's the minority populations. Well, the reality is most of the people on welfare are white people. You know, and look, there was a point in my life when, as a kid, you know, my mother had no choice but to go on welfare to feed us. And, you know, I'm not proud of it, but I'm also not ashamed of it. It was there. It helped. and now I want it to be there for someone else. I'm not of the mindset that we slam the door behind us and make everybody behind us suffer, Jake. But, you know, I was having these conversations about the budget, and there was absolutely no discussion possible with these folks about some sane revenue enhancements. No sane discussion whatsoever. All you want to do is raise taxes. But on who? You know, I buy it. I told the guy, I get the whole T thing. I understand the whole T concept, which he obviously didn't know what, well, he admitted he didn't know what T stood for. Taxed enough already. For my Tea Party friends who don't know. And I said, I agree. You and I, the people who swing a hammer and drive trucks and do radio programs, we're taxed enough already. The people who work and create the wealth, you're taxed enough already. At the end of it, the people who aren't taxed enough are the people who are benefiting from your work. Why not look to them and say, you know what, times are tough. We all have to sacrifice. We all have to throw in. If I'm going to have to eat store brand macaroni and cheese, maybe you give up caviar for a day. Just one day. And, you know, that doesn't even grab their attention.
Well, they bought into the right-wing talking points. I mean, how many people believe that there is that welfare Cadillac mother? You know, she's out there and she's on welfare and she's driving that Cadillac. Oh, and I like this one. Well, you know, I know a woman down the street, and I've heard it from people who are normally intelligent, people who are normally decent people say, well, you know, that woman down the street, every other year she has a kid, so she can get more from welfare. Yet if you look at the reality, that's ridiculous.
Well, it doesn't work because that's not how the law works. We've had this ingrained in our mind for so long that that's possible, and it's not. There's a cap on the program, but you can't explain that to folks because they've got these preconceived notions. It's in their head. And once it's rattled around in that empty vessel, it's hard to go out through the ear hole.
And it's easy to blame the teachers when their taxes are going up, even though teacher's salary are just a very small part of the formula of why they're paying more taxes.
Well,
it has a lot to do with the economy, has a lot to do with reimbursement from the state,
has a lot to do with the
taxes within the school district, whether jobs have left. All those are very important variables. But, you know, when they attack teachers' unions, they're an easy target.
It has everything to do with, oh, they're greedy. They want health care. They want health care. We need to do away with collective bargaining so that we can steal from them whenever we want. I mean, that's really what Wisconsin's about. That's what Ohio's about. That's what a lot of these states are about. It's about stealing from workers without having to ask. That's what it's about. And, you know, you look at these folks up at Pocono Medical Center who are standing together saying, hey, we want our rights. And the employer's saying, nope, we want to be able to steal it anytime we want. Anyway, when we come back, I want to talk about Missouri, and we're going to have Bradley Harmon here. He works with children. He's a public service worker and president of the local union 6355 of the communication workers. Evidently, good news there. They've kind of held back this work right to get shafted bill that the Republicans were pushing. We're going to talk about that when we get back. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Thousands of people are gathering in Lansing, Michigan today for a big rally protesting an outrageous Republican political attack on working families, seniors, and the poor. Governor Rick Snyder and Republicans controlling Michigan's legislature are pushing through 40 different anti-worker, anti-union bills. The most sweeping may be the Emergency Manager's Bill, a financial martial law that allows governor-appointed corporate managers to literally take over local governments, dissolve them, destroy all collective bargaining contracts, and even oust elected local officials. OPEIU Vice President Joe Marudiak is in Lansing today for that rally.
It is martial law, and the local officials should be just as upset about it as the unions are, because it takes power away from the people themselves, the people who have elected someone to represent them, and gives it to one individual.
Marudiak says the labor movement is more energized than he's seen it in 30 years.
Well, I've been doing this 30 years, and I've never seen this level of energy. I wish we would have had it when the PATCO strike happened, but it's happening now, and people are drawing a line in the sand. And I think it's wonderful, and it shows a lot about the next generation coming up, saying, you know, we're not going to let these rights be taken away.
In addition to attacking working families and unions, Governor Snyder is cutting taxes for corporations in Michigan while increasing personal taxes by 31%, including taxes on seniors and the poor. As many as 50 managers are being trained to take over local governments when Michigan's governor signs that emergency manager's bill. Jesse Russell has more.
The legislation allows the state to appoint the managers in municipalities and school districts that are facing insolvency. The managers would have broad authority, including the power to strip labor contracts and usurp the decisions of elected officials. The state has allegedly been in the process of training more than 50 managers as the debate raged on over the proposals. Michigan State Senator Gretchen Whitmer spoke out against the legislation last week, as it also provides $1.8 billion in tax cuts for businesses.
The current job creation policy is to create so many taxpayer-funded millionaires in the state of Michigan. How on earth is that shared sacrifice? Today, my colleagues on the other side of the aisle say it's okay for an individual to come in to a community or into our schools and make $1 million on the backs of the taxpayers.
This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raising but the wages. Everything's raising but the wages. Gasoline, groceries, and our hazes. Everything's raising but the wages.
Yeah, you know, Reuters is reporting out of Missouri that the sponsor of Missouri's right to get shafted at work bill said today that she's going to keep pushing. She's going to move on forward with her bill later in the month, despite the possibility of a veto by Governor Nixon. Republican State Senator Luann Ridgway said she would push the bill once again once the Senate reconvenes March 28th following its spring break. This bill would outlaw contracts that make union dues a condition of employment. You know what's always amazing to me? It's amazing to me that these are very people who say that they want government out of people's lives are the very ones forcing more government on us. It's one of those things that always just drives me nuts. They always want to be, they want you out of their business, but they want to be in yours. Amazing stuff. Anyway, I've got Bradley Harmon. He's a public service worker. There in Missouri, he's also a president of Local Union 6355 of the Communication Workers Association. Bradley, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, yeah. Great. I'm really glad to be on.
You know, I look at what's going on there in Missouri, much like Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio. The state list is lengthy. This attack on workers' rights to organize, to me, again, a fundamental right, in my opinion. They want to steal that right away from me, and you guys have kind of fought this back right now. Congratulations.
Well, yeah, thanks. You know, it's part of what's going on here in Missouri. It's definitely part of what's going on across the country. There's a Luann Ridgway, the reason she's pushing this is that she's term limited in the state Senate, and there are big out-of-state money folks who are I'm sure dangling things in front of her to be pushing this, you know, extreme anti-worker agenda. And I mean, even the Missouri Republicans aren't even all you know, in line with trying to take away workers' rights, which is part of why we think this is going to die. We hope, and we're going to keep the pressure on them.
Well, I hope so, because, you know, as you're seeing across the country, the right, the political right in this country feels emboldened to come out of their secret closets, to come out of their cloak rooms of their think tanks and their secret societies and say the things that they've been whispering to each other like schoolgirls for generations. They feel emboldened now to bring this stuff out now and attack workers and their rights and their unions, because again, they see workers as the enemy.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, we've got, you know, Luann's crazy right to work for less bill that she's pushing here. You know, we also have, we have a lot of the crazy stuff that they, and I wonder if they're trying to throw out the crazy so that they are distracting us from something else. I mean, we've got a state senator here in Missouri from Chesterfield near St. Louis who is trying to repeal our state's child labor law.
Yeah, I saw that.
You know, it's crazy stuff. I'm a social worker. You know, I work with abused and neglected children, and I can tell you that there's a reason why we have a child labor law. And I can't imagine what our state turns into if we start taking away things like that. But, you know, if you go after something as basic as collective bargaining, then maybe it's easier to take away something like child labor laws or OSHA or, you know, a minimum wage or a 40-hour work week. I mean, it seems like that's the direction that these extreme folks are trying to push us in.
Yeah, you know, and you look at that, and the thing that drove me nuts, and we talked about the senator there who was trying to push this. This
Calamity Jane Cummins.
That's her name. The part that caught my attention was that they didn't have to report or have to keep hours for kids who work in hotels as long as the hotel provided them with a room. And I'm going, really? You're going to give a child a room at a hotel? That is just screaming for trouble.
Uh-huh. You know, and I don't know what it's frustrating to me, you know, in, you know, Missouri's definitely a state in the Bible Belt. And so a lot of times these folks will claim to have, you know, religion on their side. And I just don't get how you push something to take away child labor laws or something that's going to make it harder for regular working people or for the poor and claim to be, you know, the religious right. I just don't get it. But that's definitely something that we're seeing a lot, you know. And so the translation of that is this big government stuff that can't go, you know, oh, big government, you know, we're trying to take down big government, you know, and what they're doing is pushing government into, exactly like you said, into interfering with workers and our ability to freedom to associate and, you know, act in our self-interest. They're also pushing, they have another crazy senator, no shortage of them, from Cape Girardeau, which is Rush Limbaugh's hometown, Jason Crowell. He's pushing a bill that would eliminate a public sector union in this state. We'd have to pay the state over half of our dues money for the privilege of having our dues deducted. We'd have to sign everybody up every year, which would be virtually impossible, and spend the rest of the dues that we collected on accounting so that we could, you know, every dime and penny that we spent, we'd have to tell Jason Crowell that it wasn't on ever letting any workers know that Jason Crowell was trying to screw them.
Yeah.
That is the
point in all of this. The fact of the matter is Republicans have gone so far into the pockets of big business, so far into the pockets of the very wealthy, that the only place working people have left is the Democratic Party. And Republicans see that if they want to destroy the Democratic Party, they have to destroy workers.
Well, that certainly seems to be the strategy. I don't think we're going to let them do it. You know, I mean, I've listened, Rick, to some of your stuff from Wisconsin. It's been awesome, you know, and seeing workers standing up and fighting back against this, you know, this doesn't even look like it's, we've got a Democratic governor who is not, you know, I'm a public employee. We've had some issues with how much he's cut the budget. But, you know, he's not out to try to take away workers' rights forever, like some of these extreme Republicans are,
right.
You know, and we even have Republicans, like I said, who are, you know, in our state Senate who are opposing this. The Jefferson County Republican Central Committee, which is just outside of St. Louis, passed a resolution saying that right to work was too extreme for Missouri, and why are we pushing it? Our state Chamber of Commerce was initially opposed to putting right to work as part of their big legislative agenda. Uh-huh. But they're right. But the heavy, like, what's the guy's name? Donahue?
Chamber of Commerce. The
president of the U.S. Chamber. He flew into St. Louis last week. My local and other unions were out there picketing him whenever he came. We had actually 4,300 folks who came out in downtown St. Louis, which, you know, our big city did not cover. The opposition is everywhere, and I think that they've gone too far, and they've reminded working people of why we have to organize, and we're doing it. I'm very hopeful.
So let me ask you, what's going on? Are you guys taking to the Capitol like we're seeing in Wisconsin, but like we're seeing in other states? There are thousands of people who are converging on their Capitol almost daily to have their voices heard. Are you seeing that kind of push toward your Capitol?
You know, I don't know about daily pushes. You know, I mean, we're absolutely, you know, we're active with the Capitol, and we're sending lots of folks. My local and the SEIU local, represent state employees, are having our lobby day on March the 30th. We're actually pretty confident that it's going to be the biggest lobby day that we've ever had. It's been easier to ask, state workers a lot of times who are, you know, they're just paying their dues and they may not be super interested, or it's a lot easier to get folks involved and willing to mobilize and to do something right now. I think that's what the really encouraging thing is. We're not under the same. We don't have a crazy Republican governor and a crazy state Senate leader and a crazy state House speaker like you do in some of these other states. We have crazy, but they're a little bit more concentrated in their own little area.
Now,
so
you've diluted.
We're not in the code red zone quite so much here in Missouri,
like Wisconsin and Ohio and Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and Indiana. Yes, Indiana. Yes, haven't I heard something about craziness going on there? Yeah.
Yeah, there's another state, and a couple of the other ones as well. But, you know, what I've been saying is this is that moment, and you've alluded to it by saying, you know, the people who maybe may not have been active members are now going, hey, maybe I better get active, or they're going to steal this from me. I've been saying for a while, maybe we should be sending Scott Walker, you know, chocolates and candy, you know, chocolates and flowers, saying thank you, because this is that one thing that we couldn't have figured out, we couldn't have started, we couldn't have jump started people into action, even if we had jumper cables and batteries attached to, well, this is terrestrial radio, but we couldn't get people motivated. This one little thing that Walker's done has motivated, I think, the labor movement.
Oh yeah, I agree. You know, we've only had collective bargaining rights in the public sector in Missouri since 2007. And that came out of a state Supreme Court ruling. And we don't even have the full set of rights that public sector workers do in a lot of other states. But it's been very instructive to a lot of us who haven't grown up, you know, with having the same rights that everybody else should have. Wow, these people are really fighting hard for this collective bargaining thing. And then, like, we start to look at how much more do, like, Wisconsin state employees make than Missouri state employees do. And it's a lot more. And Wisconsin isn't a lot richer than we are, and it's not a lot bigger than we are. And maybe it's because they've had collective bargaining for 50 years, and we've only had it for 4. You know, there's a link between these things.
Absolutely. And it's the same link that I tell non-union employees everywhere. Private, public, doesn't matter. If you work for somebody, union's your best shot at getting a fair shake.
Absolutely. You know, and then this whole right to work thing, there's a link with that, too. You know, I mean, our members, you know, we provide public services mostly to poor people. You know what? There are a lot more poor people in right to work states. It's just a fact. The infant mortality rate is higher. The domestic abuse rate is higher. All of the social problems that you associate with poverty get worse if you get right to work.
Yep.
Bottom line.
And that's the thing that you don't hear the big multimedia guys saying, the big multinational corporations pushing. Saying, yeah, bring right to work to your state so you can have higher abuse rates and higher infant mortality and lower wages. You just hear that this euphemistic, you have the right to work. So flowery. Much like they want to do with the minimum wage, do away with the minimum wage so you have the right to work for a buck an hour. Basically, that's the game plan. But I want to give you congratulations, and I'm a victory well won. Bradley Harmon, I appreciate your time. Congratulations and keep up the fight there. Because again, you know, if Missouri goes down, you know, it's not long before Pennsylvania and other free states go down with you. So I appreciate your time, brother.
Solidarity.
We're going to take a quick break. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
The greatest problem our nation faces can be summed up in one word, leadership. Okay, make that three words, lack of leadership. America's corporate, political, media, academic, and other leaders aren't. They're not leaders because they refuse to stand tall, be bold, offer vision, inspire, and, well, lead. We've got too many 5-watt bulbs sitting in 100-watt sockets. They're squishing the historic can-do spirit of the American people, reducing it to a dispiriting ethic of surrender that says we shouldn't even try. Start with our leaders' willful abdication of the American dream. They've given up on the notion of producing a shared prosperity that creates a broad middle class. For more than a decade now, Wall Street and Washington have let millions of jobs disappear and pushed wages down. They now yawn at the entrenched jobs crisis that is eating the middle class, and rather than responding to the plight of millions of hard-hit families, they're trying to bust unions and kill minimum wage laws. They call it the new normal, in which the workaday majority of folks should simply ratchet down their hopes and expectations. A national commitment to quality education, health care for all, and a decent retirement has been reduced to a yo-yo program. You're on your own. What about creating a vibrant new green economy based on renewable energy? Let China build it, they shrug. How about constructing a bold nationwide job-creating network of high-speed trains? Spain built a great one, and even France has one, but we're told it's too much for America. Our deteriorating and dangerous infrastructure? Better that we cut taxes for the super-rich and pray for God to take care of infrastructure. This is Jim Hightower saying, these people are pathetic. And shameful. You can't call yourself a leader if you're too weak and too afraid to lead.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdowns.com.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
In talking with our last guest, you know, it made me think about that crazy woman in Missouri, State Senator Jane Cunningham. And again, you know, I go back to this SB 222, which is, and this is the name of the bill. This act modifies the child labor laws. It eliminates the prohibition on employment of children under age of 14. Restrictions on the number of hours and restrictions on when a child may work the day are also removed. This is the law. This is what they wrote. It also repeals the requirement that a child ages 14 or 15 obtain a work certificate or work permit in order to be employed. Children under 16 will also be allowed to work in any capacity in a motel, resort, or hotel where sleeping accommodations are furnished in any capacity. Also, it removes the authority of the director of the Division of Labor Standards to inspect employers who employ children and to require them to keep certain records for children they employ. It also repeals the presumption that the presence of a child in the workplace is evidence of employment. You know, I go back, that hotel part just you know, 16 and under, we'll give you a room. You can do any job, no restrictions. So, you know, 16-year-old girl, here's a chainsaw. Go out and cut the tree. You know, at some level, you know, you got to look at these people for what they are, man. They're scum, pure and simple. Doesn't get any easier than that. And speaking of scum, well, I had to have a segue, and the only thing I can think of for this guy is, you know, he's scum. The guy who, the video guy, that James O'Keefe, the guy whose latest attack was against NPR, National Public Radio. And I think NPR is learning. And I'm hoping that people learn that the way you deal with a bully, Jake, and it's the same thing when I was a kid, best advice my mother ever gave me.
Confront him.
My mother said, you know, if two or three people are going to beat you up, you go after the biggest one and you smack him right in the mouth. Now, you're going to get beaten up. You're going to get a good beating, but that kid is going to remember that you smacked him. Don't back down. Don't give in. Don't turn and run. Stand your ground. Fight back. And NPR, I think, a little late, but they're coming back and saying, look, they offered us this enticement time and time and time and time again. They said, you know, we'll give you $5 million. $5 million. And time after time after time, they were told. In fact, six times, they were told that, you know, you can give us money, but it's not going to change our editorial content. But if you look at the video, and I did watch it, it's a hack job. It's like any edited job. And if you're going to watch what's presented to you, you're going to come away with what they want you to think. The same thing happened to Acorn. The same thing's happening to Planned Parenthood. And if you remember, a while ago, we tried to get the people from Planned Parenthood to come on and stand up before the attacks started. Said, come on, talk to us. Get your side of this out first. Right when the last attack video came out, no. We don't want to cause waves. folks, there's a tsunami coming at you, and I don't want to make light of what's going on in Japan, but the onslaught is coming. Waiting meekly is not going to help you. And I think NPR, a little late, I think they're waking up to this.
Well, they're not just hack job. I mean, they did the tour. They did the tour of the national, you know, the national conservative media. Laura Ingraham, repeatedly, they played the conversation, but only the conversation part of it that they wanted played. They didn't mention that six times.
Six times
he
they offered them
to go offered, along with it.
And they said, no, we don't do that. Six different times. And I said the exact same thing when the Acorn video came out. I said the exact same thing when the Planned Parenthood, when the education thing happened in New Jersey. All of the, when that stuff came out, show me the raw footage. Don't show me snippets here and there. Because you know what? I'll have conversations with people that I'll record, and I'll bet you I can splice together some pretty nice, interesting scandals. Which is what they did. And again, you know, it comes back down to this critical thinking thing that we seem to be not using often enough. I think when you see things like this, you need to stand your ground. And again, you know, like I said, like my mother told me, you know, you're going to take a beating, but you don't back down. You got to fight back and you got to stand up for yourself. And, you know, good for NPR. You know, they may end up weathering the storm. Whereas Acorn, they didn't have a chance. Not a chance. Anyway, Associated Press reports today that a complaint has been filed with the Attorney General's office in Wisconsin claiming that Senator Randy Hopper has not been living in his district. Don Meyer sent the complaint Monday accusing Senator Randy Hopper, Republican of Fond du Lac, of living outside of his district. Of course, he's saying, no, I was living there. I was. There's a full recall effort on coming down the road. And here's the thing about Hopper. He only won his 2008 election by 163 votes. So he's probably the most vulnerable, especially considering that his wife reportedly signed the recall petition to have him outed.
I have some worse news than that. Yeah, he did win 50-49, according to the numbers I have. In a recent poll that was conducted by a professional polling outfit, the public policy polling company, he's at negative ratings of 44-49, so right there you have about a 6-point swing as of now. And he looks like he's one of the more vulnerable. There's of the polling that I have in my hand here, Rick, three of them
are done.
Three of them have negative polling. And some of them, believe it or not, this is hard to believe. In a state senate race, Rick, three of them didn't have any opposition in 2000. Can you imagine that? For state senate. Wow. That must have been my point is, if they didn't have an opposition, it's probably a very tough Republican district. And they're still in trouble. So what does that tell you?
And you don't think that happens here?
I very rarely is there a state senate seat where there is a competition. Very, very rarely in this state.
Okay.
But my point is, if that happened, it's probably because they felt, well, they didn't have a chance. And some of these people, even in hard Republican districts, their numbers are looking pretty weak.
Yep. Well, yeah, I mean, I've seen that there is a possibility of swinging six of the eight. Three of them, I think, are done. They're toast. And the other three of those are going to be competitive. Two of them are very safe. You're never going to get the other two of them out.
Well, here's the thing. This one district, Senator Grothman, in 2008, won 80-20. I mean, is that a landslide or what?
Yeah, he's safe.
However, the polls say, as of right now, 60-32. Now, that's still a nice margin, but the numbers are a lot less than what he was elected by. So
he's fine.
Well, my point is, there's a lot of people, and these same people, even though they might not be able to replace their senator, when it comes to recalling the governor, that's a different story.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to it.
Let me clarify it. Right? These are all Republican districts, obviously. If you have a Republican senator, and the numbers here are looking bleak, can you imagine? Statewide right now, the governor's numbers.
I wonder if Hopper's wife would have bought the "I work hard and I love my country." I wonder if she would have bought it if he would have tried to use.
Does that mean they're living together?
No, actually, he moved out. He's living in Madison, according to the wife, the left behind wife. Mr. Hopper ran off with his mistress, and they're living in Madison together, not in Fond du Lac. So
imagine that.
Because I guess the way I understand it is the people went there to kind of confront him in his home and say, hey, we want you to sign this recall, and he wasn't home, and the wife said, well, he doesn't live here. He ran off with his mistress that's half his age, and hey, God bless him. I guess you can get away with it.
Wow.
But yeah, I think he's milquetoast. They're gonna most certainly do away with him.
Well, actually, since we're talking about it, let me mention one other one. There's a Senator Olson who ran unopposed. And their numbers right now are 47-49, and they ran unopposed.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, you got to get the signatures.
Yes.
And as I understand, they're on the way to doing that. But it's an uphill battle. So we'll see. And I'm excited that I think Hopper, I think he's done no matter what. I think there's a lot of momentum to get.
Here's one who definitely has problems. Kopanky, in 2008, they won 51-48. The numbers, as of a couple days ago, negative 41-55.
You also got to remember, 2008 was a big Democratic year. So, the election results may be a little skewed. But, those kind of negative numbers.
Thanks to the governor, the Democratic electorate is definitely
motivated
to get that governor.
Yeah, well, I think the whole state's motivated. And this is what the governor has done. The governor of Wisconsin has done all across the country. We'll call him the Tony Robbins of politics. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. And now for the news from Washington, D.C., our Washington Bureau Chief, Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you so much.
So what's going on in the big city?
Well, I don't know where to start. We can start with Japan, I guess. And that is that the United States, first thing, the Surgeon General is now saying to people, on the West Coast, that what they need to do is to begin to get some iodine pills. And, of course, the worry is that there aren't going to be enough and there's a run on them in drugstores anyhow. And so because they don't know what's going on with the radiation. Now, one of the ways we're helping Japan is also a way that we are helping ourselves, and that is that we are using the modeling mechanisms at several laboratories, but Livermore Laboratory in California is one of the big places that we are using, and they're doing computer modeling on a few things. One is radiation and where it's going to go via wind, et cetera. And the other place that they're looking at, of course, is what happens to these fuel rods.
Right.
And so the United States is sort of giving technical expertise in that kind of way.
Yeah, a lot of the news that I've been seeing is, you know, A, prepare yourself, and B, it's not as bad as the news is telling you. So kind of mixed messages.
And we're hearing really both messages.
Right. Well, because I don't think you want to have a full-blown panic. I think you want people to be smart enough to say, look, I need to prepare myself in the event that the worst happens, but let's hope for the best.
Right. And, you know, I don't actually generally refer to because I think that they're pretty right-wing, but I have to tell you the Drudge Report has actually done a very good job of aggregating a lot of these articles that have been going on about the disaster in Japan. So that's sort of the Japan issue. Now, it is interesting that Senator Bingaman in New Mexico said that he is going to be having hearings. And the type of plants this is, apparently there is either four or five of these in Japan altogether, and either four out of the five or five out of the six, and my memory is not perfect on this one, but that they're now saying it's a particular type of plant, and 35 years ago, two engineers quit Nuclear Regulatory Commission or the company, and I think it's a GE-built reactor, saying that the design was unsafe.
And as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, the governor of Virginia is attempting to close one of the plants there.
That may be the same reason. Exactly.
You know, I'm generally not one to, you know, to jump to, you know, to on the bandwagon. I mean, as I called last night, who I know is very knowledgeable in this, he's saying, look, you know, at the end of this, it wasn't the earthquake that caused this. It was the fact that the tsunami came through and knocked out all the power, so you couldn't cool this. This isn't, you know, the earthquake, it did what it was supposed to do. It's just that you had a twofold disaster here. And, you know, I don't know that we, you know, jumped to conclusions here. So.
Well, yes. And then, of course, the Republicans had their own little tsunami today when it came to the funding bill. They did pass it for 3 weeks. But, you know, what's so interesting, it was approved 271 to 158. 54 Republicans joined 104 Democrats voting against this. And so essentially what happened is they got some Democrat votes and quite a few. And it is now clear that if Boehner wants to pass this kind of thing, he's not necessarily going to get it from his party. Because Tea Party people are just determined that they're not going to do this.
Yeah, I was just looking at Bobby Schilling's rant here a minute ago, the guy who beat our friend Phil Hare last year. And he is just absolutely beyond himself. The people sent us here. It's like my two-year-old kicking and screaming on the floor. That's the feeling I got from his little rant, because it was the same sentiment over and over and over and over again, with no other point than, you know, he believes that he was sent here to shut down the government or cut spending.
Well, that's where they're coming from, and they're giving Boehner a very, very hard time. I think he, you know, be careful what you wish for. He wanted to be speaker, and that's what happened.
Well, like I said last night, I think he had visions that he was going to be the next Tom DeLay, without the jail and without the proctology exams. But he was going to be the next, you know, hammer. He was going to be the hammer, and it's not working out that way.
Oh, right. According to my sources, you know, Tom DeLay used to pray every morning and put this prayer group together, and then he'd just go out and do what he had to do.
Right. And Boehner's not that guy.
last but not least, although we could go on, but General Petraeus today was in front of Congress. He talked a lot about the fact that the Taliban has been a little more active lately as spring is coming. And that they expect the spring offensive, that they think that they're going to be doing very well with this, but this has been a major problem. And so he has been very concerned about also the fact that the Republicans are trying to cut spending at the State Department and for USAID, and he said that that is very important, that they can't even get to that they're not able to, Republicans won't cut all of this, and they're not going to be able to do the hearts and minds kind of things that he considered important. He said that they will, in fact, wind up
reducing the number of people who are going to start at drawdown. They said in July. They said, however, they have increased what they're doing on the border in terms of making sure that they're taking weapons from people that shouldn't have it.
And as I also read, he said that we need to have a long view, which means we're not getting out of there anytime soon.
For sure. We're going to be in there. It's like Iraq. You know, yes, supposedly we're getting out of Iraq, but there's going to be 3,000 people in just in the embassy alone in Iraq.
You know, again, you know, another one of those things that have people upset about our president. Just, you know, amazing stuff. Ellen Ratner, I appreciate your time. Thanks for the update from Washington, D.C.
Have a great evening.
We're going to take a quick break. Back after this. The people of today are so tired of the left. Their argument for freedom is how much would it cost to work it all out. It's money. Work it out. Money. Money. All around. Keep the game before it drags you down. Down. Acting a crime. See the sky. Hungry jungle hunters with one on bandit eyes. Mother Nature's army retreats to hide and cry. So what's it all about?
We're smart policy. And sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genie. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come on, you good workers, good news to you out there. Move out of the good old union has come in here to win. Which side are you on?
Well, you know, that was the, you know, that's the question that the people are walking in the street up in East Stroudsburg over. You on the side of the workers, the people who take care of the patients, or you're on the side of the administrators, the people who sit and push papers all day? That's the question. Anyway, the right has got to be losing their minds today. The vice president, according to Reuters, who is known for his Amtrak riding history, evidently the Amtrak station in Wilmington, Delaware, is going to be named after the vice president, according to a new report. Biden, as you know, commuted from Washington to Delaware and back every day that he was in the Senate using the Amtrak system. So he was, you know, one of their biggest supporters. Now the station was renovated using some federal stimulus money that Biden and the administration pushed. Of the Of the money, the $37 million for the project, $20 million came from the stimulus bill. So, you know, money that was put to use building something. And now, according to NBC 10 in Philadelphia, it will be christened the Joseph R. Biden Jr. Railway Station, Railroad Station. So, good. Good, good, good. Should drive the Republicans nuts because they couldn't put Reagan's name on it. Because if you remember, you know, and they're still doing it. They're still trying to put Reagan's name all over everything. You know, the only thing that doesn't have Reagan's name on it are the outhouses, and that's got Larry Craig's name on it.
I'm surprised they haven't pushed for Mount Rushmore.
He is not gay. He never has been gay. Reuters reported today the president would veto a Republican-backed bill killing his signature mortgage foreclosure prevention program if Congress should choose to pass it. The Republican-controlled U.S. House of Representatives Financial Services Committee approved a measure that would shutter the Home Affordable Modification Program, which aims to help struggling homeowners stay in their home by winning lower mortgage payments. The Obama administration strongly opposes House action to eliminate HAMP, and if legislation were to reach the president's desk, his senior advisors would recommend he veto it. You know, here's the problem, and this is one of these. Again, we've let this get down the road too far, and depending on whose numbers you're using, 25 to 40% of the people who have mortgages are upside down on their mortgage. They're underwater in their mortgage, whatever term you want to use, meaning that they owe more on the mortgage than the home is currently worth. So if you've got, and this is what I love about this, the right loves to tell the tale that, well, you know, it was the CRA that gave those people loans. Those poor people bought those $30,000 houses, and they're upside down on their mortgages, and that's brought the entire economy collapsing to its knees. At least that's what they say. The reality is you look at the houses that are being walked away from right now. They're $300,000-$400,000 homes that are right now worth about $200,000. And people are going, I pay it. It's dumb to keep paying it from a financial standpoint. Why would you continue to pay on an asset that is worthless? So they're just walking away, and it's going to make this crisis much longer and much worse. And if you remember what we talked about right from the start, I said right from the start we should have jumped in, helped that first wave of people, stop that first wave so everything didn't come crashing down, because you didn't want the crisis to get worse. Now, I honestly don't believe that it's possible to do what I think you have to do, because I think it's such a big problem now. And if you look at why this is so important across the spectrum, it comes down to jobs. You look at the construction industry is hampered by 30% unemployment all across the board, and builders need people buying houses to build houses. So not until we fix this crisis, and I'm not sure where you go from here.
Well, I mean, let's be honest, Rick. There's a couple things wrong with this situation. We talked about the banking industry. I mean, you talked about it. I talked about it. I can remember as a young child, it was absolutely community bank, and they dealt within the small town I grew up with.
But you also needed 20% down.
But there were so many advantages to that because they had an invested interest in the community, and it worked to everyone's advantage for them to work with someone who maybe missed a payment here, missed a payment there. The bank sat down with you. They worked out an agreement. But now, the way the system is so convoluted with these bigger banks, it actually – it's better for them if you go under, because they can take that mortgage and sell it on a secondary market. I mean, there's just so many things that need to be changed for this not to occur on a regular basis. I mean, it's one of the tragedies of this whole economic downturn.
Yeah, and I don't know what the answer is. I hesitate to say now we just go and we cram everything down and we refinance everything at a lower price, because, you know, what about the people who paid their homes off? What about the people who did the right thing? It's a hard message to sell. But do you throw all these people out into the streets and then have all of this available surplus supply, which then brings the price even further down.
But
this is a big, big, complicated mess the banks have put us in.
When you look at the ultimate results, it snowballs. These people lose their homes. The communities lose a tax base. Their workers within that community oftentimes laid off. It just snowballs and snowballs and snowballs.
And at the end of it, it's a theft of wealth from the working class.
Yes.
Because this is wealth that they put into these homes. This is sweat equity that they put into these homes. This is their life savings that went into this, and now it's being extracted. And the people who are going to end up with these houses at the end are the wealthy, the ones who are able to weather the storm and then sell them for a tidy profit down the road. And it's interesting, you know, to watch how this is going to unfold. Because at the end of the day, I don't know how we bounce back from this. You know, I started thinking about it. You know, most of the people who have mortgages are completely upside down. If you bought in that $250,000 to $400,000 range in a lot of neighborhoods, especially in places like Nevada or California, where Nevada, I think I had read like 70% of the people who have mortgages are upside down because the market has that badly collapsed.
Well, and the truth is out there, the market was inflated also, right?
Well, because you had people who were coming out. They wanted to be there. It was a desirable area. Housing was tight at the time, and people had jobs, and the economy was steaming along, and credit was cheap and easy, and it all came tumbling down. You know, like any house of cards, one stiff wind, and it all goes down. So, you know, in the coming months, this is something we're going to have to deal with because the Congress is going to have to deal with this because I think we're going to see a wave of foreclosures, of people being kicked to the streets. And my first gut reaction is to always side with the guy at the bottom. Screw the guy at the top. He's going to be fine. He's got his lawyers and his lobbyists and his politicians. He's got everybody up at the top to help take care of him. I worry about the people at the bottom. Those are the people I'd like to see catch a break every once in a blue moon. And, you know, if it means a guy who gamed the system and is able to stay in his house, I'm happier that he does that than you have some bankster come in and take it out from under him. Or somebody who's really trying gets their house taken from him. Just my thoughts. Yesterday we talked about P.J. Crowley, who I like P.J. Crowley. We've had him on the program a couple of times when he was a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. I think a decent guy. He resigned yesterday, and as I said during the program yesterday, he was fired. You know he was. Somebody in the Obama administration pulled him in and said, hey, you can't make the president look bad. Find the door. Whatever excuse you got to give, use it. Well, Earl Blumenauer, a guy I like, a Democrat from Oregon, came out and said it's outrageous that Crowley was forced to resign and demanded that Obama fix the situation. Outrageous, P.J. Crowley leaving the State Department for saying the truth about the treatment of Bradley Manning is what Blumenauer tweeted on Tuesday. He said Obama needs to fix this. And, you look at the reality is I don't think Crowley said anything wrong. I think he was right. It's stupid. It's unjustified. It's, whatever you want to say, whatever the words you want to say, I think it's ridiculous what we've done to this kid. And Dennis Kucinich, said there'd be consequences for the way the military treated Manning. And if you remember, he didn't get in to see the kid either. So, like Kucinich said, they're trying to break this kid. And he said it's not defensible. There's no way, no stretch of the imagination that this could be allowed and that this should be happening in America. And I agree with him. The kid may have done something, but I'm sorry, making him stand naked and at attention for several hours. I don't know. Isolation for 24 hours a day for months at a time, not all that thrilled, Jake.
Probably a bit severe.
Well, the day before he had the president saying, as far as I know, he's being treated well. So Crowley did come out and kind of contradict what the president said, but I don't think he was wrong for saying it, and good for him.
Well, let's be honest. It, either the president should have been informed or somebody screwed up and didn't inform him. One of the two. The president should have known that.
Yeah, another right-wing governor, another crazy. Have you been following this guy up in Maine, this LePage? He's a walking comic book. But he's out there calling for shared sacrifice. You know, like just like here in Pennsylvania, times are tough. We got to make sacrifices. You know, if you want prosperity, you got to make sacrifices. He said. So what he's proposed is he's going to raise the required payments from state workers into their pensions from a little over seven and a half to almost 10%. So you're gonna steal from the workers to pay into the pension, and you know, okay, I get it. Okay, times are tough, need some shared sacrifice. So you would think that that Mr. LePage would himself take the increase as well, wouldn't you? Well, he exempted the governor's pension, which would have cost him almost $6,000 over his term. So the workers who don't make an awful lot of money. They're paying more for their pensions. The governor, he's going to walk away scot-free. And when LePage leaves office after four years as governor, he's going to be eligible for a $26,000 per year pension, while a teacher in the state of Maine has to work 25 years to get that same $26,000 a year pension. That, to me, doesn't seem like shared sacrifice. That, to me, seems ridiculous. And the fact of the matter is, he's handed out big tax cuts, like here in Pennsylvania, like Wisconsin, like Ohio. It's the game plan. I think we've caught on by now. At least I hope most of us have. The reality is, this is the playbook. And the Heritage Foundation and the American Enterprise Institute and all the other euphemistically named little cabal clubs, they've come out with their game plan, and they've handed out the playbook, and all of the minions are following the plays. And you and I are the ones that are suffering. A couple of quick stories, some weird stuff. Reuters reported a former Minnesota nurse who advised depressed people over the internet that the best way to tie ropes to hang themselves, and encouraged one to webcast the event, was found guilty today of inciting two suicides. Mr. Dinkle, William Dinkle is his name, 48, of Minnesota, surfed the internet for victims posing as desperate people who were talking about committing suicide. Well, he talked him into it, and he could face 30 years in prison. So good for him. Good for him. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, go to thericksmithshow.com. The podcast is there for your entertainment, your convenience. Also, if you want to give us some feedback, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do appreciate the input, and I do respond to all the emails personally. So look forward to that. And, you know, thanks, Scott Conklin, for coming into the studio. Great having a conversation with them. And also the folks, SEIU, Healthcare Pennsylvania, the great work they're doing up in East Stroudsburg. I can't wait to find out what happens tomorrow. This is the kind of stuff to me that's exciting. You know, this idea that people are coming together, this idea that you've got solidarity, you've got collective action, you've got people marching in the streets. To me, that's exciting stuff, and it means we can together take our country back. Thanks for being here. We'll see you tomorrow night. Have a great night.
It's coming from the wind. You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming to the U.S.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Well, they're stealing down on Wall Street and in Washington, too. You know, it makes me wonder what's a guy on Main Street to do. I've always tried to be honest, upstanding, kind of guy, but I must admit lately.